Blog Talk Radio.
No one.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Are you familiar with the term sugar daddy and sugar baby? If not, a sugar daddy is a man who is usually wealthy or at minimum very financially self-sufficient, who is willing to be generous with his finances and offer women who are usually significantly younger than him financial assistance as well as financial support. A sugar baby, quite naturally, is any woman who is the recipient of the aforementioned sugar daddy's financial generosity. What are the benefits of a sugar daddy, sugar baby arrangement? What are the potential pitfalls and drawbacks? Are sexual favors more of an option than a mandatory requirement? My guest this evening is the founder of a service known as the Sugar Daddy Formula. She encourages women to connect with wealthy men who are willing to offer them financial assistance and financial support for an indefinite and unspecified period of time. My guest believes that sugar daddy, sugar baby relationships should not only remain legalized, but they should be encouraged, condoned, and nurtured from now until the end of time. Who is this woman who believes that any woman who is attractive, charming, and has a high degree of sex appeal should take advantage of her feminine charms and hook her a man willing to take care of her financially indefinitely? Her name is Taylor B. Jones, and tonight Ms. Jones is going to enlighten my audience about the benefits and potential drawbacks of a sugar daddy, sugar baby arrangement as Ms. Jones takes time out of her schedule in order to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Is this Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh my God.
You're really good at this.
I got to ask you, though, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect the woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, Mode One. This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode One, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke. Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she with no broke. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down. Get down, girl, go ahead. 18 years, she got one of your kids, got you for 18 years. I know somebody paying child support for one of his kids. His baby mama car crib is bigger than his. You will see him on TV any given Sunday. Win a Super Bowl and drive off in a Hyundai. She was supposed to buy your shorty Tyco with your money. She went to the doctor, got LiPo with your money. She walk around looking like Michael with your money. Should've got that insured Geico for your money. If you ain't no punk, holla, we want freedom. We want freedom, yeah. It's something that you need to have. Cause when she leave, yo, she gon' leave with half. 18 years, and on her 18th birthday, found out it wasn't his. Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke, now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke, get down, girl, go ahead, get down, get down, girl, go ahead, get down.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, May 22nd, and the weather has been nice here in the Chicagoland area, and I'm enjoying it. Tonight, I'm going to have what should be, and I say should because sometimes I tend to think a conversation is going to be interesting, and it ends up being kind of tame. Then other times I think a conversation might be tame, and it ends up being very, very interesting. Perfect example is like last week. To be quite frank, I didn't think last week's conversation would be as interesting and provocative as it was. If you joined me last week, I interviewed this woman named Katarina Fang, and for a woman, she really impressed me because she was one of the women who admitted that she could not hang with a beta male. She said she used to be real alpha, and she dated a beta male for like 9 years, and she grew bored of him, and she realized that in order to attract more alpha males, she had to become more beta. And the thing about it, I've been telling women that like literally for years. I'm talking about like probably 15, 20, 25 years I've been telling women that. Anyway, yeah, so, but yeah, the conversation tonight is going to center around the sugar daddy sugar baby arrangement, the sugar daddy sugar baby arrangement. I love all my listeners, but I got extra love for my live listeners, even more specific love for my chat room listeners. I got my number one most loyal listener. She's back. She missed us last week. She's back, Adrian, a.k.a. Diva. 36-26-36. That's right, Adrian. She's happy because her Miami Heat tied up the series with the Indiana Pacers, 1-1. And so it should be a series. I heard Paul George, he has a concussion. Hopefully he can work through that. But the series is tied 1-1. In the Eastern Conference. Now, if you're an NBA fan over in the Western Conference, man, the Spurs looking nasty. They are destroying Oklahoma without Serge Ibaka. They are killing the Thunder. So I think that might be a sweep or maybe a 4-1 series victory. But, yeah, they've been killing. Yeah, they've been doing a good job against the Thunder. So I hope the Eastern Conference Finals go 7 games. I would like to see that go a full 7 games. I got Frankie, my man, Frankie, in the chat room. I always tease Frankie because Frankie got this baby face, man. If you look at him, he looked like he's like 16 years old. He got these cherubic big cheeks like a baby, and he just looks young. But then when he opens his mouth, he has this deep, resonant voice, like he's 52 years old, and he's a good guy. I love Frankie. Got Jazz Kaz in my chat room. Jazz Kaz has slowly but surely been becoming one of my most faithful and loyal listeners. Good to see Jazz Kaz. I got Kenman. Kenman's also been very consistent. Kenman is from Holland. He listens from Holland. So I like to see Kenman in my chat room. Then I got S5FKC. I don't know how the fuck I would pronounce that, but hey, I'm glad to have you in my chat room. S5FKC is in my chat room. Next week, I will be celebrating my 7th year anniversary. My 7th year anniversary on Blog Talk Radio will happen next week. So join me next week, and I invite you to call in. Hey, what's up, Bronzy? Bronzy, okay. The real Bronzy. You know, there was a fake Bronzy in here a couple weeks ago, so I'm assuming this is the real Bronzy. Yeah, me and Bronzy have known each other a while through the internet. He's in my chat room. But I was saying, yeah, I will be having my anniversary show next week. So if you want to call in, I invite my past guests to call in, as well as all my loyal, enthusiastic listeners to call in. If you call in, I want you to tell me one of two things, if not both. I want you to tell me what was arguably your favorite episode of the 2013-2014 season, and what was your least favorite episode of the 2013-2014 season. So, yeah, if you call in next week, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear what was your, of all the episodes you've listened to this season, not, well, you could go beyond this season. I prefer you stick to this season. But if we get to talking for a while, you know, you can bring up shows from the past, too. But preferably just this season, I want to know what was one of your favorite episodes of the 2013-2014 season, and what was one of your least favorite episodes of this season. So that will be next week. June 5th, I'm not having a show. Yeah, if I change my mind, I will keep you posted next week. But as of today, I will not be having a live episode on Thursday, June 5th. Thursday, June 5th, I will not be having an episode. I will be returning on Thursday, June 12th, I will have an episode with a gentleman who's been on my show before. His name is Robert Jackson. Robert Jackson is based out of Indianapolis, and he's a mentor to a lot of young men in Indianapolis and beyond, and he will be on my show to talk about the importance of fatherhood, the importance of fatherhood. And then the week after that, I will have another woman from Australia. This will be like my 4th female guest from Australia. Her name is Natalie Angel. Natalie Angel will be on my show on June 19th. She's what you call an intuitive. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but an intuitive is similar to a psychic. They're not exactly the same, but if you've ever watched a show on CBS called The Mentalist, Patrick Jane is the character's name. The show is called The Mentalist. That's basically what he is. He's what it would be known as an intuitive. He can just meet people, and he has an intuitive sense of the type of person they are. If I say so myself, and I don't have any credentials to back me up, but, you know, I would say, and I say this in my second book, if you've read it, I have some what I would call intuitive skills, or if not intuitive skills, body language skills. I can tell a lot about people by paying attention to their body language, to the point where my friends have really given me kudos in the area. For example, like a lot of times when people in the past have introduced me to couples, I could usually tell if that couple was going to last or if they were going to break up fairly quickly. I would say on average I probably have like a 90 to 95% success rate in terms of predicting if a couple are really into each other or a couple, they not. And it's sometimes it's amazed some of my friends when I've had some of my predictions. Like couples, they just knew were going to last. I would be like, nope, they're not going to last. They'd be like, Allie, you're crazy. They're a great couple. I'm like, they ain't going to last. Sure enough, a few weeks, a few months later, that person would end up telling me, yep, Allie, you were right. They broke up. I'm very good at reading both men and women's body language and examining their chemistry with each other. Anyway, enough bragging on me, but I was saying that Natalie Angel is going to be on my show June 19th. That's her specialty. She's, again, what's called an intuitive. She will be on my show to discuss how staying in tune with your intuition, as they call it, your intuitive instincts will help you in your personal and professional relationships. So that should be an interesting. Now, Frankie in the chat room, he said Australian women are fucking great. I agree. Because if you remember when I had, just a few weeks ago, I had, I'm forgetting her name, Sabrina. Oh, Sabrina. She brought it. Yeah. If you remember Sabrina, you know the favorite word I love that Sabrina said. You know I'm going to have to play it.
Fucking.
Oh, I love it when she says fucking. I love it when really any woman with a sexy voice says fucking. But yeah, Sabrina, she was from Australia. And yeah, I loved it every time she said
fucking.
Yeah, it was just fucking sexy as fuck. So, yeah, she's all about helping people improve their fucking.
I like to help people improve their fucking.
Ooh. Say it again.
I like to help people improve their fucking.
Ooh. Say it one more time.
I like to help people improve their fucking.
See, listeners, that's the type of guest I love. I love a guest who can come on here and not only drop knowledge and wisdom, but potentially get a man's dick hard or a woman's pussy wet while they're talking. And Sabrina did that. But yeah, she was from Australia. I actually have two more Australian women coming on my show in the next few weeks. I already mentioned one, Natalie Angel, and then 90% chance I'm going to have another woman by the name of Rachel Wilson. She's from Australia. Matter of fact, to toot my horn a little bit, I kind of blew up down there in Australia because of that Sabrina interview. I've been hearing from all kinds of women from Australia. It's been tripping me out. Not only women like who want to be guests, but like just regular women who like just were fans of. I mean, I would say since I interviewed Sabrina, I've probably heard from like 20 to 25 women from Australia. I've heard from at least three or four that were interested in being guests, and then I've heard from another like 20 that just wanted to tell me they enjoyed the interview. Some of them were bold enough to tell me that that interview left their pussy wet, and so I'm loving Australia right now. You know, Australia giving the brother a lot of love, although I would never visit Australia because they got all the... Australia, I don't know if you've ever been there. They got the most fucked up, like, critters of arguably any country. They got all kinds of shit that will kill you, like jellyfish, snakes, crocodiles, spiders. I mean, just the most fucked up of every insect species, reptilian species, fish species. They got it in Australia. So it lowers my motivation to want to spend time there. Because, I mean, you remember that guy used to have that TV show. He died from a jellyfish thing. He used to, you know, do real dangerous shit. I can't remember that guy's name. But, yeah, man, Australia got some of the most fucked up. Woo! Yeah, they got some. But Kim, he reminded me, you know my favorite thing I love for a woman to say, so this is going to be my final thing to do with Sabrina, then I'm going to take an intermission break, but I love when she said...
You're the king.
Yeah.
You're the king.
You know Allen Roger Curry loves to be called the king.
You're the king, Allen.
That's right. Anyway, I'm going to take an intermission break and when... No. Hold on a second on that intermission break. I got to talk about a story real quick. It's a story that bothered me to a degree, but also have some strong opinions on it. I don't know if you saw it on Facebook, but there's a story about a woman, young lady by the name of, I'm forgetting her name now, Yvonne Funky, I want to say. Funky, F-U-N-K-E. And she was a straight-A student at the University of Wisconsin, and she ended up getting involved in porn. She did a porn scene, and then she started getting ripped by her former high school classmates, and she ended up taking her own life. Now, I'm saddened by the fact that she would decide to take her own life. I'm sad when anybody decides to take their own life. But there's been this over the last, I don't know, roughly 5-10 years or so since the internet has become a part of people's lives, where there's been this new term about cyberbullying. I don't condone the notion of cyberbullying, but I have to say this. I just have to say this. As an adult human being, you know, there was an old saying when I was little that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words and insults will never hurt me. When you become an adult human being, you have to develop thick skin. You have to develop thick skin. You just have to, particularly if you're doing anything that puts you remotely in the public eye. You have to develop thick skin. For example, since I've become a book author and a public speaker and a talk radio host, there's message boards all over the world where people hate on me. I mean, Bronzy, he knows it. He's in my chat room. Bronzy knows that there's this one site called PUA Hate. That's all people do is hate on me. They insult me to the highest degree. I don't give a fuck. You know? I don't give a fuck. I ain't going to commit suicide because somebody hating on me and calling me names and whatever. I mean, so again, this is not to take away from my empathy over her suicidal death, but it's a lesson for other people to learn that people gonna always, there's always gonna be a percentage of people that dislike who you are and or the way you do things. Some people might just hate the fact that you wear gray suits all the time, or the way you wear your hair a certain way, or the way you talk a certain way. So the fuck what? Understand that anybody who's read my book, my initial book, Mole 1, that's at least one-third to one-half of what my book is about. Mole 1, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking, is, among other things, Mole 1 is about reaching a point of what I call egotistical indifference. That's the term I use in my book, egotistical indifference. And that's just really a simple, formal way of saying you've reached a point where you could give two flying fucks what other people think of you. So, you know, there's not much more to say. I mean, again, it's sad that this woman took her life. The thing I didn't like about the video I watched that was describing the story of her death is that there was this woman almost trying to blame her death on the people who criticized her on Twitter and the people who insulted her on Facebook and even the guy who filmed her porn scene. Number one, nobody put a gun in her head and told her to do porn. I know how the porn industry works. They don't, you know, people try to imply that the porn industry forces women. That's bullshit. That is bullshit. Maybe in the old days, maybe in the 60s and 70s, you had a handful of cases of that type of shit. But, man, that industry is so regulated, you don't force people to do porn. That woman had to sign all kinds of waivers to release herself to do that porn shoot. So that's number one. She was not forced to do that porn scene. She chose to do it. And when you choose to do something like a porn scene, you gotta be willing to take whatever pot shots come your way. You just got to. I mean, we're living in a social media-driven society now. So, you know, anything you do, you don't even have to be a celebrity nowadays to have people take public pot shots. You could be just a regular motherfucker and somebody going to call you out on Google or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or something. So, you know, anyway, I didn't want to get into a preachy moment, but I just, that story just, again, it just really bothered me. And, it bothered me that she even took that step to take her own life. For all we know, it could have been some family issues. It might not even been because of these critics and harassers on the internet. Her father might have said he disowned her for doing that porn shoot. Or her mother might have said she disowned her. Or somebody else, you know, that's really, really close to her, like within her family. But anyway, I'll just use that story to say my lessons to anybody listening right now is that, no, Don B., I didn't hear about Mos Def, so you're going to have to enlighten me about Mos Def. But, yeah, that's just my quick message, my kind of preachy message is do not let other people's harsh, subjective criticisms and personal insults dictate who you are, what you're about, and how you behave. If I was allowed people to do that, I would never have this show talking the way I talk on this show. I would definitely never have my other show, The Erotic Conversationalist, because I had a lot of prudish types say, oh, Alan, yeah, you're basically having phone sex for everybody to hear with that erotic conversation. I was like, so? And that's the way they criticized me about erotic conversation. I just was like, so? And then they look at me like, damn, okay, I guess I can't come back to that. You can't come back when somebody just says so. I said, so? Anyway, I'm going to take an intermission break, and when I get back, I'm going to introduce my guest, and we're going to get this conversation started. So, don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Can you feel the tension? You know what's coming up next, don't you? You all know what's coming up next. So, what can I tell you? I'm excited. I'm standing backstage and I'm all jittery. It's the moment we've all been waiting for. What can I tell you? I read this guy's book about 2 years ago, and this is some of the most powerful shit I've read. The guy's mind-blowing. He's got a radio show. He's been all over the place. He's got crazy fans. He's amazing at what he does. He loves helping people as well. This guy will go on for hours and hours, even if it's like one person or 100 people. He doesn't give a shit. He'll stand there and he'll help people and help him and help him and just keep it. And he loves this stuff. He's passionate about it. He changed my life. He's changing everybody's life in the room and thousands of people, and he's amazing. I'm really happy. I consider him one of my mentors. I love the guy. Please go crazy for Alan Roger Curry.
And I need to know what you said to the Japanese girl on roller skates.
I went up to her. I said, you got a talent for this rollerblading thing. And that was probably the only moment when she was smiling. She was like, yes, I love to rollerblade. I said, well, to be quite frank with you, I didn't give a fuck about rollerblading. I said, your ass looks so juicy in that, what is that, spandex? And she was like, oh, my God, I mean, would you just come to Venice Beach to just look at women's asses? I was like, is that a trick question?
Please visit www.mode1.net for more information on the Direct Approach Dating Summit 2010 DVD. Are you an expert and or book author who offers men and women products and services related to dating and relationships? If you have a new product, a valuable service, or upcoming event or speaking presentation that you would like to advertise on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network that is guaranteed to hit your target demographic audience, then look no further than Blog Talk Radio's number one talk radio podcast program for active dating singles. Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry has had more episodes ranked number one in the category of romance, dating and relationships, love and sex, and overall self-help for singles than any other talk radio podcast program on the entire Blog Talk Radio network since January of 2008. I will help you advertise any product, service, or event that is designed to help men and women improve their love lives, sex lives, and overall social lives. Please write me at blogtalkradioadvertising@modeone.net. That's MODEONE.net. Don't wait. Do it now.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on Blog Talk Radio in the categories of relationships, romance, and self-help. And let me see who's entered my chat room. I got Charles D. He's now in my chat room. What's up, Charles D.? I still got Diva 362636. I got my man Frankie. I got my man Jazz Caz. I got my man Kenman. And I got my man Bronzy. And other shout-outs would be my older brother and ace confidant, Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry. My younger cousins, J.P. Jones in Chicago, Athabasca in Maplewood, New Jersey. Christopher Curry in Detroit. Philip Pulliam, who just recently celebrated his birthday, and his older brother, Irvin V. Pulliam, the third, EVP3, is listening in my phone queue as he normally is 98.3% of the time. EVP3 and Adrian, I give them props. They've been supporting the brother since my show started, like back in like 2007, 2008, up until now. They've supported my show relentlessly or whatever word I'm looking for. But, yeah, they've been arguably my two most loyal supporters of my show over the years is EVP3 and Adrian, a.k.a. Diva. Now, my guest for the evening, she was born in Detroit, Michigan, but she spent a lot of her formative years in Germany, which gave her the opportunity to experience many cultures, many different people from different backgrounds, living, you know, diverse ways of life. And later on, her family settled in Richmond, Virginia. That's where she completed her high school education. She went on to Virginia Commonwealth University, where she studied business, and she's always had a business type of mind. She's been business savvy, which of course is conducive to what she does now. She owns and operates several businesses, from cleaning to an internet global media development company. And outside of what she primarily does, she helps women start up and expand their businesses. And she also likes to spend time on the golf range, on the links. We got a female golfer. She likes to unwind with a nice cigar. She loves good food. She loves the high life, which relates to what she does. And what exactly does she do? Well, she is the founder of what's called the Sugar Daddy Formula. And unless you've been in a cave for a long time, you should know what those two terms mean. If you don't, we'll talk about it. But It's been around for a while, the sugar daddy, sugar baby arrangement, but I would arguably say just in the last, 20, 30 years, it's increased in its popularity. Now, of course, it's a very controversial type of arrangement because a lot of people liken it to prostitution. But here's a woman who she has clients. She makes money encouraging other women to become sugar babies. So on behalf of the Blog Talk Radio Network and Upfront and Straightforward, listeners, I want you to give it up for Miss Taylor B. Jones. Taylor, how are you?
Mr. Curry, I am doing just fine, or shall I call you King?
You got to put the "the" in front of it, the King.
The King.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah. See, listen, she's a smooth cookie. I told her that on Twitter. She knows how to get on my good side. She's starting off the interview calling me the King. Taylor, you already messing with my main man from Holland, Kinman. He just said in the chat room, damn, she got a sexy voice. So,
now, hold on, Mr. Curry. You wanted to keep it in Australia. I want you to bring it back to Atlanta. You know, Sabrina, yeah, she had it going on, but we're in Atlanta today.
Oh, okay, now, since you want to challenge Sabrina, I want to hear the way you say the word fucking. Say fucking.
Fucking.
Oh, say it again.
Fucking.
That's you competing with Sabrina now. Okay, one more time. Say fucking.
Oh, I'm going to give it to you one more time. Fucking.
Oh. Listen, she she working on a brother over here.
She's
juices flowing. Ain't that something. See, I got to have my guy with her because I already know from reading about her. She's a smooth businesswoman. So she knows how to work men. Otherwise, she wouldn't be doing what she's doing. So, well, first of all, before I get into all the specifics of what you do, I want to quickly ask you, how did you enjoy? Because, I spoke in Berlin, Germany, last year, and I had a great time interacting with the Germans. They showed me a lot of love. Matter of fact, my signature phrase, say it again, when I was about to leave, the male Germans over there, and particularly the females I met over there, they said, Alan, we will always associate say it again with you for the rest of our life because we've never had anybody use it quite the way you do. But anyway, how was your experience living in Germany and how would you contrast it with living here in the States?
Well, it was a bit of a culture shock when I came over here in the States. I spent probably about 12 years living in Germany when I was born. And when you come over to the States, everybody's like, let's go to the mall, let's hang out. I'm like, who wants to go to the mall and literally sit there and walk around, just hang out? So it was a little bit different getting accustomed to how people hang out in the States here. But I enjoyed every bit of my Germany experience. My family was in the military, so I'm essentially a military brat, but a spoiled one, that is.
Oh, I know you spoil. I know you spoil. Because you wouldn't be doing what you do if you weren't. Okay, so, all right, well, let me ask you. At what age did you first engage in the role of a sugar baby?
I was born a sugar baby. They just didn't tell my parents.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. No, really. When was the first time that you had a man other than, of course, your father, who, of course, a father's going to take care of their daughters and spoil them to one degree or another. But a man outside your family, when was the first time you had a man outside your family spoil you in the manner that a sugar daddy would?
When I was 21.
Okay. Well, first of all, now again, I tend to assume that 99% of my listeners know what these terms mean, but you never know. There might be that 1% that say, I've never heard the term. So for my listeners, quickly define what a sugar daddy is and what a sugar baby is.
Well, as far as a sugar baby, as we'll call her, she's actually a woman who aspires to associate with a person or person, usually a man, but she could be a woman too, who have proven in their lifetime that they have accomplished more than just the status quo. And we choose to associate ourselves with those individuals to enrich our own lives. And that is what a sugar baby is.
Okay. Now, what about a sugar daddy? What's your definition of a sugar daddy?
And for a sugar daddy, well, he's a man who aspires to an advanced level of achievement and an excellence in his professional life. So he's more than just the average guy who can afford himself to have an enhanced lifestyle. And he chooses to lavish on his companions and his partners in life. And I don't see nothing wrong with that. Do you?
I have mixed feelings on the whole sugar daddy, sugar baby arrangement. Now, if you noticed, and listeners, you can look on the episode page, how I found you is because I actually wrote an article where I featured your name. Because when the whole Donald Sterling scenario broke in the media, of course, everybody was suggesting that he was a sugar daddy to Vivian Stiviano, the woman who he's heard on the audio tape talking to and criticizing the likes of Magic Johnson. And so I decided to write an article asking the question, matter of fact, the title of the article is, if prostitution is illegal, why is a sugar daddy, sugar baby arrangement legal? And when I went to Google to do some research on things related to the sugar daddy, sugar baby arrangement, your name just kept popping up, pop, 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 like popcorn. Taylor B. Jones. I said, let me check out this Taylor B. Jones. And so, yeah, I mentioned you in a couple sentences about basically just simply what you do. And then, yeah, after I mentioned you in the article, I said, what the hell? Let me have her on the show. And
speaking of that, how do you feel about that situation right there?
The Donald Sterling situation?
Yeah.
Oh, so now she's going to try to interview the host, the guest.
Oh, no, I have my opinions about it, too.
Okay, well, number one, well, you talking about as it relates to what we're talking about, the whole sugar baby thing, or just in general?
Well, I like to go deeper into things, not just the surface level. Of course, he could be a racist, and you know, from what he says, but what would make a woman actually record the conversation for what benefit? I mean, personally, I like to have personal relationships, and I would like to think that the person I'm with, there's a certain confidant between us two. But she recorded the conversations. What do you think about that?
Well, she claims that he asked to be recorded. And matter of fact, there's been one or two other people who have corroborated with her story. A lot of people said that he told her to record him because he was forgetful. Now, if that's the truth, that's the truth. Now, if the side of me that say doesn't buy that as the truth, yeah, I believe she was setting him up, and so she could take him down. I believe he must have pissed her off. This is how I believe things went down. I believe that when he first hooked up with her, I'm chuckling because this kind of reminds me of myself. The people who follow me for a while, particularly who listen to shows, my other show, The Erotic Conversation, know I have a certain group of women that I affectionately, and I emphasize the word affectionately, refer to them as my obedient good bitches. So oh. I have women who write me. The starting point, I think, Donald Sterling, when he first connected with Vivian Stiviano, I think as a lot of men with money and power tend to assume that she was going to be this very, very, very obedient, submissive type companion. And I think she probably started off being like that, or at least played the role that she was like that. But then I think as the days, weeks, and months went by, she started letting her true self, which was a very headstrong type woman, very independent type woman, a woman who thinks for herself, knows how to play the game, started, I think that side started to come out, and I think he said, oh, shit, you ain't the obedient good bitch I thought you were. You trying to run some shit up in here. And then I think that's when his wife got involved, and as you know, they sued her for embezzlement. Yeah. And then that's when I think she was like, oh, motherfucker, I'm going to get you back. I'm going to bring your ass down. Don't be suing me, Vivian Stiviano. I'm the alpha female up in this bitch. And so, yeah, I mean, it was sad, a lot of stuff that came out of his mouth. Now, the one area where I defend him, me being the guy, everybody know how I am about being outspoken and speaking your mind and saying, I mean, you know, a lot of us have said some shit in the privacy of our home that we probably wouldn't want said, although as I've gotten older, the gap between those two is narrowed tremendously. Most shit I say privately, I would say publicly. But for the average person, there's always going to be something they might say to a relative, companion, friend that they don't necessarily want aired on television or on the radio. And I think when he was here's what I think was going down. This will be my final thought, and then I'll let you give me your thoughts. I think, again, he thought she was going to be this obedient good bitch, and she wasn't. Then more specifically, I think he thought by him doing financial favors for her that they were going to be fucking like rabbits, but from what I hear, they weren't really doing that much fucking. And she was fucking some brothers. You know, and I think he was like, what the fuck? I'm spending all this money on you, and not only are you fucking other men, but you fucking brothers and shit. You fucking, you know, he's probably his basic, like, well, I don't want to say the N-word on my show, but he's basically, yeah,
he was like,
you fucking brothers.
Can I get a little Steve?
And, because see, that's the thing, and I'm going to get into this with you. Well, I'll touch on that later. But. So that's my take. Okay, now give me your thoughts and strong opinions about how everything unfolded and how you feel about both Sterling, things he said and did, as well as Stiviano, the things she said and did.
And for her, I call her the sugar baby scorn, because she probably didn't get what she wanted, and the whole thing with the wife, oh, she had her attack mode ready. And then the book deal, of course that's lined up. Come on. What is it? Her name, what, Corinne, what, Stevens? Is that right, Mr. Curry?
Oh, Corinne Stephens?
Yes, Video Vixen, you know, who's by her side. So that's automatic. So, yeah, just a sugar baby scorn. Tape's ready.
Sugar baby. Okay, well, since you opened that door, have you ever had a female client that was kind of you took under your wing and you were showing her the ropes, but then she had a misstep here and a misstep there, and she became, as you would call it, a sugar baby scorned?
I never had a sugar baby scorned in that way. Usually it's when a woman who steps into this medium thinking that she can just find a man to provide her with what she wants without expecting that he's expecting something in return. Usually a newbie, let's call her, comes across a dating site that is very attractive to her, thinking that she's going to find a generous man, and she's asking X amount of dollars for a man to give that to her. He's expecting something in return. Now, she goes out on a date. Maybe let's say she sleeps with him. And then she gets nothing at the end of the date because she's sleeping with him because she wants that carrot that he's dangling in front of her. So she's going to feel a certain way emotionally. And to her, she would be scorned by that. So it's a little bit different as far as with my clients. Because my clients, they come to me wanting to know how they can get what they want from their man without, as far as sleeping with them, without, as far as not even actually trying to see them. And when I ask them, what are you really doing? Because in my book, all men are sugar daddies, and all women are sugar babies. And it's just the degree of a man as far as what he's going to be able to do for you. And I believe in relationships.
We got to pause on this. We got to pause on this because that's a strong statement because, of course, I vehemently disagree. You believe all men are sugar daddies.
All men are sugar daddies.
And that's based on what?
It's based on the fact that when a woman is with a man, we want you as a provider, and we are the nurturer. So she's going to be with you because you can take care of her needs, whatever that may be, and you're satisfying her at that moment. But when she's not getting what she needs from home, she's going to stray. She's going to find it elsewhere. And that's what I mean by all men. See, with me, I have standards.
Because I can say on my behalf, and you know, I'm sure I can think of a lot of my friends too, I can say emphatically, I have never played the role of sugar daddy to a woman. Matter of fact, if anything, to someone toot my horn, if you're talking about purely in a financial sense, I've been a male sugar baby to women, female sugar mamas. I've had quite a few women, particularly when I lived in Los Angeles. I had a good handful of women that took care of me financially. I mean, like, real nice. And yeah, matter of fact, I'm saying my lifetime, no less than 3/4 of the women I've dated were women who made, not only usually made more money than me, but half the time I've dated women that made 2, 3, 4 times as much money as me. So, yeah. So if you're talking about, when you say take care of needs, if that means specifically take care of financial needs, I've never, ever, ever. Now, I've taken care of women's sexual needs. So if you're going beyond money just to take care of a woman's needs, period, I've definitely taken care of women's sexual needs, and that's usually what motivated them to take care of me. But financially, oh, fuck no. I would.
It's with the needs in general. And just like with the women who took care of you, that's universal. So for a woman to do that, and just like with any man, I want to know, why would such a person do that for you? Like, for those women who took care of you, why did they do that?
Because I fucked the shit out of them. That's why they did that.
No, 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 no. It's because you're the king.
Oh, say that again.
You're the king, Alan.
Say it again.
You're the king, Alan.
Yeah, they wanted to take care of the king. And
So essentially, you were providing them pleasure that they were getting from you. So that was their driving force to do what they wanted for you. And with the sugar baby, sugar daddy relationship, it's for me and with the clients and what I teach women, you can get what you want, but the other common denominator, you need the man to want to do that. Because if you say, I just want X amount of dollars, you might as well become the unexpected hooker and call it what it is, because that's what you are. And I don't believe as far as those, it's like for women who want that type of relationship, I think they're creating a false reality because they don't want to come to terms that they're actually playing the hooker role when they ask a guy for X amount of dollars for the day for their companionship, because it becomes a transactional relationship. For me, I develop relationships. I enjoy being in a relationship with a man, and he happens to be older because I like to be intellectually stimulated. I like to do things that the guy who's my age won't do. So it's different. And my driving force to attract such a man is different than a girl who is in a financial bind. Let's say the college girl who's looking to have her tuition paid.
What's that woman's name? I'm forgetting her name. Yeah, because she was in the news, and Adrian, I see you in the chat room saying focus. that was cute.
Adrian doesn't want to have a threesome.
Even when I'm in seductive mode, Adrian knows this, I'm always focused. Shit, I ain't never not focused. Yeah, but I can't think of this woman's name. It's on the tip of my tongue. But listeners, there's this woman. Matter of fact, it relates to that story I was talking about in the intro. She was kind of similar to this woman. Oh, well, she didn't do anything that drastic like kill herself. But this woman says she added up that her college tuition and expenses were going to be just really, really expensive. So she got into porn business to make some quick, nice money. And, of course, you know, people came out criticizing her and whatnot. Well, my main thing is this. This is always my philosophy on people and the things they do. As long as you ain't doing something illegal, and as long as you ain't doing something that imposes on other people's personal boundaries, I say, do what the fuck you want to do. And if this woman wanted to do porn, fucking do porn. As long as you own it, though. That's my key phrase with people. You got to own shit. When you do shit like that, you got to own it. And that woman from Duke, she owned her shit, whereas this woman who killed herself, see, she didn't own it. She did it, and then she didn't own it. You got to own that. But, yeah, back to what you were discussing, and this relates to the article I wrote. The fuzzy line between being a sugar baby and her, because I know from us talking off air that you've listened to one or two of my previous episodes, and I want to say you got to listen to at least a portion of when I interviewed Beige Fletcher. Did you listen to that interview?
I listened to it. Yes, I did.
Yeah, and I see Beige and Adrian in the chat room. She more than remembers Beige. Because Adrian told Beige to fuck off. But see, this is what I had a problem with Beige, is that two things. Number one, if you're going to use a motherfucker for his money and you mold one about it, mold one meaning that's my term for being just bold, upfront, and straightforwardly honest about your desires, interests, and intentions. If you're a woman and your name is Linda and you go to a guy, Gregory, and you say, listen, Gregory, I really don't want to share your company, but I'm willing to share your company if you hook me up with some financial assistance, financial support. And he said, and Gregory says, okay, I'm willing to do that. I ain't got no criticism against you. I have no criticism against you whatsoever. If you propose that guy is down for your program, then obviously it's going to be mutually beneficial for the both of you, and who am I to criticize that? But where I have criticisms of these type of scenarios, and this is where I had a criticism of Beige, she, and by her own admission, what she would basically do is she would lead guys on to believe that they were going to get some pussy. But then once she got the money, once she had the financial favor executed for her, she wouldn't give up the pussy. Matter of fact, she said one of her strong principles or philosophies was you should never give up the pussy in exchange for financial favor. Like, she talks in her book about some guy spent $2,000 on a shopping spree and he didn't get as much as a tongue kiss. See, I would bitch slap a motherfucker like that. That's unacceptable. How the fuck you gonna spend $2,000 on a woman and you ain't even putting your tongue in that woman's mouth, pussy, somewhere? What the fuck is that shit? So, yeah, and then the second thing I had a problem is, you probably listened from the interview, she was very hypocritical because she saw no problem with women basically misleading and manipulating men, but she felt, it, both in her book and in my radio interview with her, that the worst thing a man could do was to mislead and manipulate a woman sexually. For example, giving a woman the impression he wants a long-term monogamous relationship when he really just wants a one-night stand or weekend fling. She calls that in her book disgusting. And I'm like, so you think men being manipulative is disgusting, but you're condoning and encouraging women to be manipulative? That just, I could not reconcile that in my mind, and that's where we, that's, again, you heard it, that's where the conversation went from being fairly friendly to very contentious, because I was basically like, that's bullshit. You're full of shit. So getting back to the sugar baby, sugar daddy arrangement, you said there are certain women who will want men to take care of them financially, but they don't want to give up any pussy. And my question would be, what man would be stupid enough to do some shit like that? I guess I know there are naive, goofy, stupid motherfuckers out there.
Actually, I have to give you one, because I have a sugar daddy, but he is my business partner too, and we never had any form of a sexual intimacy, but I do provide intimacy to him in some form. He's never been married, no kids. He has nieces and nephews that never check on him. They're basically waiting on him to die to collect. And I'm in his wheel. Now, how does that happen? Like I said, I never gave him any sex. So
you never sucked his dick or nothing?
Never sucked his dick.
Never gave him a hand job or nothing?
Never gave him a hand job. But what he liked about me was my mind. And he golfs every day. And he told me that when he's around his peers, all they talk about is their wives. They're not happy in their marriages. But for me, I give him life. I give him that spark because he retired in his 30s. So it's like, okay, well, I have this girl who basically checks up on me. I give him that spark. I can, you know, like, hey, let's discuss marketing and stuff like that. And he enjoys that. And we get out there on the golf range. So we have that companionship in some way.
So I am giving
him something.
You're in this man's wheel.
Yes, I am.
So other than being in his wheel, does he do, like, regular financial favors for you?
Well, as far as that, it's like I made him into my business partner.
Okay, so you guys are business partners.
Yeah.
Why are you saying like
and
that?
Because that's right. And as far as a sugar baby, it's like I always question why a woman want to get into this lifestyle, because she's making a conscious effort to want to be this sugar baby. So when I take on clients, that's the first thing I ask them, why do you want to be a sugar baby? And what's your definition of a sugar baby, so I can understand her mindset, as you will. And the first thing is, I want allowance. I want him to pay for X amount. But when I get to the core of things, they either had relationships with men that cheated on them. They actually had relationships with men who didn't provide them with anything, and they took up the slack. I even have an executive client who is the breadwinner, and she took care of her man in her marriage. She got a divorce, and she came into this lifestyle wanting what the sugar daddy represents, is that, oh, I can be spoiled. She just wanted a man who would take her out and be like, you know what, you're so beautiful and all this. So when you get really to the heart of things, I have to question why they're coming here, not just because I want to be spoiled and I want to have somebody pay for the allowance or my tuition. It's the background on what brought them here is the driving force. So.
Okay, you say there's a science. On your website, you say there's a science behind getting a generous sugar daddy. Give me a few details on the science behind getting a man to be your sugar daddy.
All right.
Wait. I'm sorry. Before we get to that, I don't know if we finished our issue of what separates a sugar baby from, say, a professional call girl or upscale erotic escort. What would you say is the difference between the two?
Well, the difference between that two is that we're actually building a relationship, and there is that emotional connection versus you go to a call girl, where it's black and white. You pay X amount for a specific amount of time, and that's it. That person's not calling you just to be like, you know, hey, how you doing? What's going on in your life? It's just transactional, and that's what it is. This right here as a sugar baby, you're having a relationship. You're building a relationship because no man is going to just do anything for you just because you just showed up and you just look good. They're going to want something in return. So it's
different. That's what I'm saying. I mean, to me, well, you just described your situation where you say you've never even sucked this guy's dick. That just blows my mind that you and his will, and he's never even come in your mouth.
You know what, Mr. Curry? Maybe when we go into, like, another segment, I can probably get him on the phone so that way your listeners can hear the other side on why a man would do such a thing, because that's the missing link. Because for me to say, like, yes, he does this, but to hear it in his own words, that's completely different.
Sure. Yeah. If before this show's over, you can get him on for like, say, 15, 20, 25 minutes, I'd sure love to get the psychology behind that, because, you know, and I understand all men are different, and so I'm not at all suggesting that all men do think like me and or should think like me. But being the man that I am, which is really the only one I can validly speak for. I could never, honestly, in a million years, I could never see myself as a woman's sugar daddy. The closest I can see to me being a sugar daddy would be, I'll tell you one guy who's, some would arguably say has been a sugar daddy. He's even lightheartedly referred to himself this term, who I have a certain degree of respect for, and that's Hugh Hefner. Hugh Hefner, but see, I understand what he does, and this is where, if I was to ever become a sugar daddy, it would be kind of in the Hugh Hefner mode, because what Hugh Hefner did was, since he was an idol, I would do all this research on him and just study, you know, what he did, why he did what he did. And the thing about him, when he started Playboy magazine, he was a major workaholic. Like, he would just wake up in his room, start writing, and he would go to bed in that same room writing. That's all he would really do. He was just like work, 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 work. And the downside to that was he didn't have a social life. So, you know, close friends and advisors was basically like, dude,
here you are trying to start this magazine about living a lifestyle that's full of, among other things, the companionship of beautiful, sexy women, but you work so much you don't even socialize with no women. So basically what he did was he bought companions. He spent money on women, and that's basically how the Playmates, the whole concept of the Playmates started. He bought women, not so much to fuck them or anything, but even though I'm sure he fucked quite a few of them, but he mainly spent money on them to enhance his own image and build his brand. And to me, that was a smart thing to do. And I say all that to say that, and I've done this to this point, I don't mind spending money on a woman if she's helping me make money. So, like, say I was to collaborate with you, and I found from my collaboration with you, it was going to bring in an extra $50,000 of revenue for me, I don't mind giving you $20,000 to $25,000. If our collaboration is bringing in cash, see, that's when I have no problem hooking you up. But on just a personal level, like just paying a woman money just to be my companion for the sake of, I've never, ever, ever in life had to do that. I mean, and I knock on wood and hope that day never come when I do, but I've never found myself in a situation where I just didn't have no opportunities for female companionship to the point where I had to come out my pocket for the shit. Like I said already, it's been the reverse for me. I've had women offer to do shit for me in order to get regular or semi-regular dick because I'm whole.
The King, Alan.
Say it again.
The King, Alan.
And now as we go to intermission break, I want you to give me your most seductive mode one.
Alan Roger Curry.
Getting up front, straightforward.
Alan Roger Curry.
Mode one.
Listeners, if you have a question or comment for my guest, Ms. Taylor B. Jones, you can call in 646-478-5710. Again, that's 646-478-5710. You can call in and either ask her a question or make a comment about the conversation so far. Right now, I'm going to take about a 5-6 minute break, so Ms. Jones, get her a swig of water, but I will be back. So don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back in about 5 to 6 minutes.
Mode one.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Alexandra Cunahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex
addiction. This is Nikki Trum, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Vocal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Brandy L. Davis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Nikki Ransom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net.
All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310-310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Alan.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Alan.
Oh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Alan.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Thanks for tuning in. It's nice to see you all again, so.
If you found this page, I'm guessing at least on some level you'd like more success.
Seducing sexy ladies. Here's the deal.
My name's Sasha. Hello. And I like women.
Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody.
This website has tons of resources to help you guys get that success that you want. It's all there for you. The articles, the videos, my blog with lots of adventures and tips. It's all there for you guys.
Let's make the magic happen.
If you're interested in some more intense training, take one of my boot camps. They are fucking good. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm doing boot camps all around the world, so I might be coming to your city.
I would love to come over there and teach you this stuff because it's awesome. And you learn how to meet tons of hot girls.
If you're in London, this is the guy. He's going to take good care of you.
He's really present in the moment. He's really good. He hooks up with tons of girls. Good teacher and just somebody you want to hang out with and learn from. Oh, so many names.
It's my first name and my sister.
Okay. Well, I will see you.
You will?
Ryan.
Ryan. Sweet dude.
Over the last few years, I've dedicated my life to getting good in a sort of fun and natural way of meeting women in the daytime.
What are you doing actually in your free time? What's your goal?
I meet beautiful girls on the street. You know, chat girls on the street. Sound test? Sound test 1, 2, 3, 4. Sexy man. Hi. Can I get a little fist action? We're filming. I just want a little fist. Just come on. You know you want to. You know you want to fist me right now. Boom shakalaka.
Yeah, check out the boot camp page if you're interested in that.
I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it's useful to you. So please.
Sasha@sashapway.com. Thanks for coming to the site and...
Stop being a fucking... Just... What... Come on, people. She's there in front of you. That's the only indicator of interest you need. She's there. You're there. Go for it.
Please pay a visit to www.sashapua.com.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview with Taylor B. Jones, founder of the Sugar Daddy Formula, on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on Blog Talk Radio in the category of romance and self-help for dating and relationships. And, oh, just a reminder, next Thursday I will have my seven-year anniversary, 7 years on Blog Talk Radio. 7 years. Time goes by. Yeah, I started my first episode. If you remember, my first show was actually called Balls Out Talk with Mo One. I did that show for about 3.5 weeks. I started that on May 29th of 2007. My late mother was still alive when I started my show. And I did that for about 3 to 3.5 weeks. And then I actually started this show under this title on June 28th of 2007. That's when I switched it to Upfront and Straightforward. My first guest was a guy named filmmaker and screenwriter from Los Angeles named Tim Alexander. And anyway, so if you're a listener and you want to call in next week, please do so. If any of my past guests are listening, they can call in too. From the listeners, the main thing I want you to talk about when you call in next week is tell me what was your favorite episode of this season, the 2013-2014 season, and what was your least favorite episode, or at least episode you had a lot of criticisms of how the interview went, how the conversation went, whatever the guest talked about. So that's next week. But back to tonight. Tonight, my special guest is a lovely, intelligent, and articulate young lady by the name of Taylor B. Jones. And she is the founder of a service called the Sugar Daddy Formula. And what she does is she teaches women how to connect with men of means, men of status, men of achievement, men of means, to be their sugar daddy. And so now, do you only work with women or do you advise sugar daddies too?
Actually, not just sugar daddies who reach out to me because they love my content so much. They're like, Taylor, you're so dead on as far as what a man wants. And I also get the men who want to be sugar babies who are attracting sugar mamas. And I actually get the alternative lifestyle too. And the reason that I get that, human behavior is across the board. We all have certain desires. Everybody wants to be seduced. I want to be seduced. And I teach them how to go about attracting who their ideal person is to get what they want. But before we get into what you're about to say, real quick, I want to go ahead, if that's okay with you, to get Rich, who is my business sugar daddy, on the phone line, if that's okay,
okay.
With you.
That's fine.
So just give me, like, about a couple of seconds to connect, okay?
Okay.
All right, Mr. Curry.
This is it.
Okay, I have Rich, who is my business sugar daddy, on the phone line with us right now.
So, Rich, this is Alan Roger Curry, host of Upfront and Straightforward. How are you?
Alan, I'm fine. How are you tonight?
Oh, I cannot complain, my friend. So let me ask you. First, your title is, as it relates to Taylor, you are both her sugar daddy and her business partner.
That's correct, and I would also I probably would add one more facet to that. I think on some level, I think Taylor is also in some way my soulmate. she's probably one of the closest people on the face of the earth to me, and we've enjoyed a very, very special relationship over a large number of years.
Well, how many years, if you don't mind me asking?
You know, we were trying to ascertain that the other day, and I think it's been, Taylor, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's been close to 8 to 10 years, hasn't it?
That's right.
That's been a long time.
Okay, so Rich, I understand that Taylor is in your will. Is that correct?
In my will?
Yes.
Is that your question? Yes, it is. Yes, she is. Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay,
yeah.
Now I'm going to ask you, you know, as I do on my show, it's called Upfront Straightforward, so I don't pull punches on here. So, Rich, I understand you've never, ever fucked Taylor. Is this true?
That's true.
She's never sucked your dick.
Nope.
She's never given you a hand job.
Alan, you know, I think the sexual aspect of our relationship is insignificant, and I think that's not where you want to go with this.
Oh, no. I would beg to differ with you, Rich. That's very significant,
okay.
And that's the only reason I'm asking you the question, because here's why I'm asking the questions is because if you've never been intimate with Taylor in any way, shape, or form, okay, well, then
yes,
I'm asking.
I've been intimate
with Taylor.
I've been very intimate on a mental level with her. That's what I'm trying to tell you. We have a very, very, very special relationship.
But
and
you've never been physically intimate with her.
I've really never enjoyed. No, I don't need a physical relationship with Taylor. I think what we have is we connect on a much, much more ethereal level than physical, you know, physical aspect of it.
And that motivates you to want to essentially, for lack of a better way, but to take care of her financially.
Yeah, I think it goes on a level that it's much deeper than, you know, I think that's one reason people mistake when they start talking about sugar daddy relationships, Alan. You know, there are times when I've been very blessed financially in my life. And I think at some point in time, you have to give something back to someone. And it just so happened that Taylor and I met, and we formed a bond together, a very emotional bond. And it's been very rewarding to me. And Taylor has turned into a very, very special person in my life. And I decided that I wanted to try. And I think I recognize something in her that I don't see in a lot of people, which is she's very creative, she's very intuitive, and she's also has a purity about her that most people don't have. And I decided that I wanted to try to assist her in her goal in life, to facilitate and to enable other women, you know, to maybe achieve the same standards and level of intimacy that we've had on a mental level. If that makes any sense to you.
Well, it does and it doesn't. Because, I mean, I know I understand everybody's different, but it just baffles me. So you're telling me you've never been in Taylor's presence and your dick was just rock hard and you wanted to just fuck the dog shit out of her. You never had that temptation.
I've had, let's put it this way. I've been very, very lucky and I've had sexual encounters with a lot of women in my life. I've lived in New York and Manhattan. I've lived in L.A. I've traveled all over the world. I've had a lot of women in my life. So the idea of sex to me is not, you know, it's not a novelty. It's something to me that is, sex to me is almost recreational. The kind of intimacy that Taylor and I have goes way, way beyond anything recreational, if that makes any sense to you.
Okay. And how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
In 2 weeks, I'll be 70.
You'll be 70?
Yeah.
You sound full of energy for a close to 70-year-old man.
Well, I
okay.
swim an hour a day, and I play about 4.5 hours of golf after that. So, you know, I think I've got a young outlook on life and one that I enjoy. And I
hold
think
on,
when
and
you...
Hold on, and not to forget... He has Taylor by his side.
That's correct. That's correct. And
what,
she's very, very young.
She said,
I have Taylor
young.
By my side, and she keeps
I just can't believe that over 8 to 10 years, y'all two have never been in, like, say, a living room with the fireplace going, and you said, damn, Taylor, I just want to feel your lips wrapped around my dick and sucking it.
Ellen, let me ask
vacations
you a question.
And everything together.
Is there anyone
okay.
in your life, Alan, that you're close to and intimate with that you don't feel like you need a sexual relationship with?
That I don't need? If you ask me, do I have some platonic friends? Yes, I have some female platonic friends. Like, I have one of my closest friends is actually on the line. I'm going to bring her in. Her name is Adrian. We're close friends. And I have another really close friend named Wendy, who's a filmmaker in Los Angeles. But the key difference is I ain't hooking them up in any kind of way financially. So to me, it's
not
comparable because, I mean, I would never it'd be different if you two were just friends, like as in just a purely platonic friendship. There's nothing questionable about that or nothing puzzling about that. But when you add the dynamic of you essentially financially supporting her, financially assisting her, and having her in your wheel, that's a totally different dynamic. There's no woman in my current life that I would ever put in my wheel. Like, I can't think of one woman I would remotely put in my wheel.
Really?
And,
is that true?
You asking me, is that true? Yeah,
There's no one in your life that you're that close to.
Not to the point where I put them in my wheel? No.
Yeah.
The only woman I can think of that I would put in a wheel would be like, I don't have children myself, but I have some goddaughters. There's some goddaughters who are mine who I would possibly include in my wheel, but as far as just a woman that I'm just like cool with, no, nope.
Well, that's interesting. Well, you know what? I don't have any children either. So who am I going to leave my estate to?
Okay. You've been married.
Yeah, I don't have any heirs.
Okay.
So why wouldn't I put in my will someone who has been this close to me? And my business partner for years. Why would I discount her? I mean, that's what I'm saying. I feel that's special about her. I think that's what's so beautiful about this type of relationship. And I really think that's one thing that people make a huge, huge mistake in the interpretation of what can develop between a man and a woman in this kind of environment. I really do. And I'm not trying to snow you. I'm telling you from a perspective of a 70-year-old man who I have not led a sheltered life, trust me.
Mm-hmm. So
truthfully, Alan, if you ever find that type of relationship, if you ever find that kind of person, you'll find that your life is going to be so much more fulfilled and rewarding than perhaps it is right now. I don't know you. You know, I've never heard of you before tonight. But I'm just telling you that if you ever really do find that type of rapport with somebody, it will be absolutely so rewarding to you that it will be it'll open a whole new world up to you. And I have
close relationships with male friends, female friends. So I'm not debating you that a good friendship, whether it's on a professional level, personal level, or a blend of the two, can exist. I'm not arguing that at all. The only thing I'm saying is that when you throw in the title sugar daddy, which you acknowledge is part of your title, in addition to business partner, sugar daddy, I have never, over the course of my life, been motivated to be any woman's sugar daddy. If anything, as I was telling Taylor, I've been on the flip side. I've had at least a handful of sugar mamas in my life. And so I've been a male sugar baby. before, but I've never been a sugar daddy. I would never be motivated. And in the small event chance that I was to become a sugar daddy, I can almost tell you, knowing my personality, sex would have to be involved. It would have, for me, it would have to be. It's no way I would be anyone with sugar daddy who wasn't sucking my dick and we wasn't fucking. That just would never, ever happen. I was telling her the closest I could see myself ever becoming would be kind of loosely similar to Hugh Hefner, the manner in which I feel like he's been a sugar daddy to some of his playmates, where they basically helped him build his career. They helped him build his image. They basically helped improve his bottom line, his net worth. See, in that situation, that's when I have no problem being financially generous. If I'm at my connection with a woman, she's helping me make $100,000 that I wouldn't have made without her, then I have no problem hooking her up. But to me, I look at that almost more as an employee than a business partner than a sugar baby. But other than that type of scenario, I personally could never do it. Now, right now, I want to bring in, speaking of close female friends, this is one of my handful of close female friends. She listens to just about all my episodes. Her name is Adrian. And, Adrian, you've been listening to this entire conversation, and most recently my dialogue with Rich, who is Taylor's business partner and sugar daddy. What's some of your questions and general thoughts and comments?
Hi, everybody. I've been sitting here listening in amazement, and there was so much I wanted to ask Taylor prior to Rich coming onto the show, but I will say that I think Taylor is a very smart young lady. She did her research. This is, in my opinion, this is a very sick relationship, and I think Taylor is using her definition of building a relationship with a man as an excuse, and she said it so many times that she now believes it. It's not building a relationship. It's using someone to get their money, point blank. And for her to sit here and try to justify it and say that is ridiculous. She did a research on this man. If he has no wife, no children, he has nobody to leave his money to, he's 70 years old. She did a research. She's very smart. At first, I didn't think so. But after hearing Rich, oh, she's very smart. So I will give her props on that. But this whole thing, she's also a hypocrite. She said that she does not do these things for money, but then at the same time, like not even two sentences later, she says, no man is going to be with a woman that's not giving him anything. You can't have it both ways. Oh, absolutely. Rich, what am I giving you? What do you benefit from our relationship? Because I'm benefiting. What are you benefiting from our relationship? Because I give him something. So let's hear what I give him from his own words. Rich?
Well, I think the biggest thing, Taylor, that you give me is you give me an element, or what I feel is an element of trust. You've always been what I consider fair to me. You've always treated me as a young and vibrant human being, and you keep me young. And also,
absolutely, all of the things that she's supposed to do for you to give her your money. Taylor's smart. I ain't taking nothing away from Taylor. If she got game like that, then you roll, girl. I ain't taking nothing away from Taylor. She got you. She got you. So, yeah, she's giving you something. She got exactly what she wanted. Yeah, I'm saying that within all relationships, you're getting something from your partner, whoever it may be. You're getting something to stay in such a relationship.
Oh, okay,
so
Taylor.
You said it so much
you believe it. You're right.
So.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
It sounds like
Rich is looking for a daughter. And you found someone to take care of you. You found this. At the time, you found a what? 60-year-old man who had no wife, no kids, nobody to give anything to.
69 and 2 weeks, 70.
Well, wait. He said that you all have been in a relationship about 8 to 10 years. So I'm going back to 61, 62. So you did your research. You got your little website going. You did your research. That's what I said. I'm not mad at you. I do not hate the game that you're running. I think it's sad because typically women like you have low self-esteem, and typically men like him have low self-esteem, and you all converge on each other to make each other feel better.
man, did that man
it's really
not,
sad.
Right? Did your man not spoil you?
Oh, my man spoils me every day, sweetheart, every day. But I'm not fucking him for money. I'm fucking him,
and
I'm with him. And I'm with him, and we have a mutual relationship. I get spoiled every day, and Alan can attest to that.
Yeah, I can vouch for that. Yeah, she does.
I get spoiled every day.
Yeah, she got a
but
good
there
man.
Is a, we're building a relationship, as you like to say. And Rich, no offense to you, and I hope this doesn't come off as wrong as it's going to sound when I say it, because I know it is. Taylor, he's going to be dead. And you stand to gain all the money. The man is 70 years old. And the older he gets, the more sick he's going to get, dementia, all kind of things are going to set in, and you are going to be sitting pretty. So, no, don't bring in how my man doesn't spoil me. My man takes damn good care of me. But it is so much different than what you got going on right now. You set out to find this man to take care of you and to give you money. Totally different. If all of this is going on in your relationship, then why haven't you married him? If you love her so much and she's bringing so much to your life, Rich, why haven't you married her? Crickets. What?
Here's what I want to interject real quick, and this is why it's different. Taylor, real quick, and I'll let you finish. Here's where I feel Adrian, well, I've known Adrian for many years now, and I know where her passion and where, and she's like me, of course. She's got unabashed honesty. But here's where it's different. Like, Rich was emphasizing the whole, you know, soulmate slash great friendship piece. And that's all fine and dandy. But, like, see, if I was flat broke, I would still hear, you know, and she would have my back regardless. And the man who she's dating, you know, I'm sure if he had some financial troubles, it wouldn't be like she would be gone the next day. And so our perception of your relationship with Rich is basically like, if by some twisted misfortune of fate that, say, a week from now he was to lose 95% of his net worth, I would be willing to bet he would never hear from your ass again.
I would still be there.
You would still be
bullshit.
There.
Well, you know what? Maybe, because I'm sure she saved up some money at this point. Maybe.
Well, I'm going to take your word for it.
Taylor, what are you going to do when you get older? Because typically men like this, they're in for newer and younger models. So are you saving the money? Oh, you're in the will, so you're going to get money to be okay. Because this lifestyle you live in ain't going to last forever.
Okay, there's that awkward silence we have on radio
from time to time. It's not an awkward silence. It's just as well as I have Rich in my life, and I'm also in a relationship.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
She is playing the game. She got another one on the side.
No, not one on the side. You said, why don't me and Rich get married?
You just said you're in another relationship.
We have a certain relationship as we just outlined. So.
Wow. Okay. You know, Taylor, you got it. I'm not mad at you. You playing the game. You rolling. And if you're finding men dumb enough to fall for what you're giving them, then so be it. I cannot be mad at the game. Cannot be mad at it. But all I can say is, wow. And then you have a website trying to teach other women, a whole generation of other women, how to be like this. And then we wonder what's wrong with male-female relationships. It's because it is bullshit.
Okay. I guess the only thing I can say after that is, Adrian, next time you call in, I'm going to need you to tell me how you really feel. You know, I need you to be
women like her, women like this just really, really annoy me. It's just ridiculous. They usually have low self-esteem. They have no education. And I said usually, so I didn't say that about you, Taylor, because I don't know. They have no education, low self-esteem. All they have going for them is their looks, and they can bat their eyes. There are plenty of women out there, black, white, Asian, Latino, that can get everything that they want everything else without having to do it the way she's doing it. She's got this poor 70-year-old man, and she's in another relationship because she's defined her relationship with Rich in a different way. She's playing Rich, and unfortunately, Rich can't see that. And that just irritates the shit out of me.
Well, you know, this is what I think. I would modify that a bit. I don't think Rich doesn't sound like a stupid guy or a naive guy. I think, and Adrian, you've heard me use this phrase before, there's some people who enter into what I call, for lack of a better term, a delusional fantasy world, which means they know in the back of their mind, they know what's going on, but they don't really want to openly acknowledge it because it fucks up their fantasy. That's my perception of how this scenario. In other words, I think Rich knows he's being, to one degree or another, manipulated and played, whatever, but he likes it. He don't have a problem with it. He's accepted it in his mind that this is cool and it's a fulfilling relationship. But again, my only contention I would say is that I truly believe that if a week from now, a month from now, 2 months from now, whatever, if somehow Rich lost like 95 to 99% of his income to the point where Taylor would only get, say, $50 when he died, she's saying she would still be there, but I don't see that. I don't see that. Because, number one,
see,
if she would still be there
I'm
for
not
him,
dependent upon him, Alan.
You're not dependent upon him.
No.
Then why does he have the title Sugar Daddy then? Why is that even a valid title? Why is he not just simply business partner / very close friend? Why does he have the title Sugar Daddy along with business partner?
So you're saying for a woman to be, a sugar baby, she has to be dependent upon him. Now, if that woman was dependent upon him, that man can say, you know what, this relationship isn't working for me, and tomorrow I'm gone. Now, that woman put herself in a predicament that she doesn't know what to do because she's been dependent on a man to take care of her. I'm not dependent upon Rich in a way that, you know what, if he's up and gone tomorrow, I'm just at a loss and I have to go out and run and find another man. I'm not dependent. And that's one of the cons as far as with a woman who is looking at this for her own sole means of income.
So, no, you're not financially dependent upon him, but he just financially pampers you and takes care of you.
Excuse me, can I interject something?
No, I want Taylor to answer the question first.
I'm going to say something, Adrian, and then I'm going to sign off because, you know, frankly, I think this is amusing. I think it's fascinating that I see the point of view where you and Alan are coming from. Well, let me just say this. I've got you, Adrian, by almost 30-some years, and I've got Alan by 20-some years. I don't know what your life experiences are. I don't know anything about the two of you. And you're making assumptions and ascertaining certain things about me, and you don't know me from a hole in the ground. And I find it very, very interesting some of the conclusions that the two of you are drawing. And, Taylor, I'm really tired of this, so I'm going to sign off and just say good luck. It was nice talking to everybody because, frankly, I'm amused by your attitudes, and maybe this is done for maybe some shock therapy. But, frankly, you know, truthfully, I don't think either one of you have any idea what you're talking about. Taylor, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Late here. I'm going to sleep.
Okay, Rich.
And now it sounds like, you know, Taylor, honestly, that your partner, as you're calling me, he got a little sensitive. But I can say on air that, and this applies to any guests I have, I don't attack any of my guests or associates of my guests just, as he just said, for shock value. Or some the people, my listeners in my chat room would say, ooh, damn, did y'all hear that exchange? No. What I do, and I would say pretty much the same thing for Adrian, is that I formulate both questions as well as my commentary based on what I've listened to. And again, there's a few things that have just baffled me about your relationship. Number one, on his end, it just baffles me that you both say y'all ain't never fucked, y'all ain't never did nothing sexual, but yet he's willing to look out for you financially. That blows my motherfucking mind just on its own by itself. Then in addition to that, he was trying to express to me that you guys have this great mental and emotional bond, basically suggesting that it's this really mutually beneficial friendship. But if it was a mutually beneficial friendship, then what money got to fucking do with it? Why would he have a title of sugar daddy if it's just a mutually beneficial? I have plenty of mutually beneficial friendships. Again, Adrian is one of them. But, you know, ain't no money exchanging hands, though. And so that's all. It wasn't nothing personal against Rich. I'm sure he's a great guy, but I'm just trying to find out. I'm trying to basically get in his head and understand what would motivate a man like him to interact with a woman like you. Now, on your end, there is no baffling. There is no question about it. I understand where you come from, and Adrian broke it down. You know, we both know where you're coming from. So on your end, there is no confusion or question marks or, you know, I know what angle you're coming from, but I'm just baffled on his end what would motivate a man like him to do what he's doing. So, you know, there you go.
There's no, as far as a lot of women will go out and manipulate men as far as to get what they want. I'm very upfront and very open about it.
So when you first met Rich, you told him, hey, I am only going to share your company unless if you do financial favors for me.
No, not at all.
You
not
just
at
said
all.
You were upfront. How are you? Okay, you described
I'm,
to
I'm
me
gonna,
then.
I'm gonna
how
tell
are you
up,
upfront with Rich?
As, well, with me and him, it's like with him retired in his 30s with business, I was able to connect through business. It's like with any relationship, you have to have some form of a connection to build upon anything, regardless of what it is. It's like how I wouldn't be able to sustain a relationship for long if we didn't have something in common.
That's
period.
Not true. No. That is so not true. Not with women who do things like you do. That is so not true.
What do women like me do?
You know, I don't know what you did, something, because you all are not having sex, so that's what you say, so I have to take your word for that. However, somehow, some way, you have manipulated this man into believing that he needs you. And you've done exactly what you needed to do. You've said what you needed to say in these last 8 to 10 years to get to the point where you are right now.
Manipulate in a bad intent. I don't have as far as any
Because well, no, you don't have any ill. No, you have no ill will towards this man. You don't want anything bad to happen to him. No. I didn't say you wanted had any ill will towards this man. Never said that. But you have manipulated him.
Oh, of course.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Now she
absolutely.
Says, of course.
That's it. Manipulation is to an intent as far as what the person has behind it. We manipulate ourselves every day. We manipulate our family, our friends, our coworkers every day. So it's just the intent behind it.
I disagree with that. What's your definition? Because some of us might have different definitions. What's your definition of? Because I already if you were to read my books, I spell out what my definition. So I know what my definition. But what's your definition of manipulation?
It's like, for example, with the beige sweater segment. As far as I'm gonna go out, do what I have to do. As far as say what I need to say to get what I want, and then I'm gone.
Okay, now give me an example then. If that's your definition, how would you say that the average person manipulates their their family and their club. Because, see, here's my two definitions.
I mean, even with themselves, it's like a person says, like, you know what, wake up, man, for example, they need to exercise. So I'm going to exercise today. But you know what, I'm going to get that little piece of cake because I want to put it off tomorrow. I'm going to start next week. They're manipulating themselves in that way.
That's not manipulating. That's not procrastination
manipulating.
And lazy.
Yeah, that's not. Here's my
that's
definition.
That's not manipulating.
What I spell out in my book is one of two things. Manipulation is A, when you are misleading and or deceptive about what your true desires, interests, and intentions are for interacting with someone. So to give an example of that with you, if I was to give you the impression, the misleading impression, that I wanted to develop and maintain this genuine friendship with you, when I knew deep down I really wanted to fuck the shit out of you, but I didn't have the balls to come straight out and say that, I would be manipulating you. I would be operating with you under the guise that I'm your... that I have a desire to be your genuine friend, but in reality, I have an underlying agenda. So anytime there's underlying motives, underlying agendas, you're manipulating. Second type of manipulation that I discuss in my book is anytime you're not necessarily being misleading or deceptive, but you're offering incentives or rewards to motivate people to do something they don't want to do. So say I wanted you to suck my dick and you didn't have a natural desire to suck my dick, but I said, hey, well, what if I decide to pay half your car note for the next 6 months? You're going to suck my dick every week? And you say, sure, if you're going to put out that, yeah, I'm going to. See, then I just manipulated with you with financial favors. So that's my two definitions of manipulation: misleading and deceptive with your desires, interests, and intentions, or you're offering people some type of incentive or reward to motivate them to engage in an activity that otherwise they wouldn't be motivated to engage in. And I feel like...
But you're missing that it's a choice that the person wants to or not. It still comes down to it's a choice.
Well, I didn't argue that. Rich made it clear that he's choosing to be your business partner / sugar daddy because it provides some type of gratification for him. I didn't argue that at all. I didn't argue his choice. Again, the only thing I'm baffled by on his end is why he... Now, let me ask you this. Oh, well, speaking of this, Adrian said I'm going to have to take your word about the sex. Now, I tend to pay attention to what I call vocal body language. And I may be overreacting, but I noticed something. When I asked him, had he never fucked you, he didn't give me a quick response. He hesitated, almost as if to say, Taylor, is that what you told them? So,
yeah.
Then he
says we've been mentally intimate. After
it,
he paused.
To me, it sounded like he almost was on the verge of saying, well, yeah, we have been intimate a couple times.
Yeah.
You know, but because he hesitated.
It's
he,
like,
cause
through,
when people,
throughout the
go
relationship
ahead.
With me and Rich, he was, at the beginning of he was already in a relationship. We never had anything. And he's been through my own relationship. Like I said, like, you know, have a relationship. I would go to him and be like, you know, cry or whatever. Like, oh, talk about my relationship. Because that's
yeah.
the kind of bond that we have. We don't
so
have
I'm
going to
ask you one more time, and then I'm going to leave it alone. He's
okay.
never, like, squeezed your tits. Not
nope.
once. Never finger fucked you.
Nope.
Never had his tongue on your pussy.
No.
Now, one final question, then again, I'll leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Is he, because a lot of men who are his age and have wealth like him, I don't know if you're familiar, well, I'm sure you already said you're familiar with the swinging scene. Is he a cuckold? Does he watch you fuck your partner?
No. Funny, but no.
Okay.
I would think any man that I've dated would even... even fathom that. No, that's funny.
You said what?
I'm not going to knock it for people who do, if that works, but no.
I have two more questions. You said that he's your business partner. What type of business are you all in?
An internet global media company.
Internet global media company.
We buy web properties.
You buy website properties.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't mind me asking, Taylor, how old are you?
I'm 32.
32.
32.
Okay.
Okay. Well, Adrian, any more questions or comments?
No, I'm good. That's what I said. I ain't mad at Taylor. She got the game rolling. Probably one of the best in her field.
Now, before I let you go, Adrian, okay, what do you find interesting then? What do you find interesting about this whole last 15, 20 minutes?
I mean,
there should
I
be one thing that kind of sticks out. I'll give you a clue. A contrast between Taylor's demeanor right now versus how Rich ended the conversation.
I'm not sure where you're trying to go with that.
Here's my thing, and hey, this is just my own perceptions. I mean, it's gospel fact, but if Rich was really had a deep conviction that there was nothing questionable with his relationship with Taylor, there was nothing to be ashamed of, nothing to be embarrassed about, he would not have gotten that emotionally sensitive right before he hung up. He would have been laughing all of this off like, oh, yeah, I've heard this a number of times before. This is nothing new to me. He would have been just amused, as he even used the word amused, but he wasn't amused.
No, I called him while he was asleep and say, hey, let's get on the phone. I'm going to put you in.
Oh, fucking sleep shit.
No.
When we first got interacting, Taylor, he was very jovial. He was very jovial when we first start interacting during this interview. And when Adrian lit into his ass, he got sensitive, and he was ready to hang the fuck up.
It's like
that's just my perception.
No, I can see that, but just knowing him, he has his patience level is really low. And it progressed over the years.
I'm saying it changed. If you're saying his patient level is low, it didn't start off that way. He started off being very friendly. He answered all the questions fairly quickly and without resistance. But again, towards that latter few minutes, when Adrian was giving her piece in such a fearlessly bold and straightforward manner, basically, in a nutshell, I feel like Adrian struck a chord somewhere in his mind or in his emotions. I feel like something she said struck a chord.
It's a degree of when you have a conversation with him, because with your straightforwardness, when we hug the face in words and it's to a certain degree, then, yes, he's going to react in a certain way. And not a lot of people can handle your hot seat, as you can see from the 3 to 4 guests that hung up the phone.
Then, Taylor, why would you put him in that situation?
Say what?
Why would you put him in that situation? If you know that he can't handle that, why would you put him in that situation? You should have been able to defend your position as being a sugar baby without even having to bring him into it if you knew that's how he was going to react.
Well, what I wanted to show is it's one thing that when you hear it from just me, but when you get the other side of things, regardless of how I am and how I do my things, to hear it from that other side, I think the listeners can be able to hear that to get a different point of view from that person who's actually doing it.
Let me give you a piece of advice. Next time you choose to do an interview, don't call him. because all he did, honestly, was confirm what everybody else was thinking from the get-go, that you're manipulating
him.
There
you go. And that's what I was going to say. Taylor, I mean, with all due respect, baby, and, you know, I ain't got nothing personal against you, but listening to him did not, in my opinion, it did not really help you. Whatever you thought he was hearing from him was going to in some way make your points more valid or offer just a diverse perspective. It was a fail. I'm sure you've seen memes on the internet where they have something and they'll say fail. That was a fail to me, particularly, again, starting with the portion where Adrian started lighting into him. You know, early
it's
on.
It's not so
and
much
where
as
I,
you
where,
say a fail, but for the women out there or guys, when you listen to the other person say to the other person how they make them feel to do what they do, people should hear that.
Here's the thing, though. Here's what would have been a win for me. This is just me, and why it wasn't. If he would have just came on and said, listen, Alan, when I met Taylor, she told me that her primary motivation for interacting with me was because she wanted to get a certain number of financial favors from me, and I was cool with that. I didn't look at it as she was using me. She was upfront and straightforward about the fact that she wanted to, for lack of a better term, use me for financial favors, and I was willing to allow myself to be used for financial favors because I enjoy her company, and I'm not ashamed to admit that, and I'm not ashamed to in any way admit that I am, yes, I am her sugar daddy. I do financial favors for her, and I'm not even getting any pussy, getting my dick sucked, and I still am willing to do financial favors for her. And if you want to criticize me for that, so be it, but I've accepted my role. And I'm, if he would have said something along that line, I wouldn't have shit to say. I would have been like, okay, you more power to you, dude. I would have to argue. I would have nothing to argue against that.
But he did say that.
But no, what he tried to argue, where we started separating, was he tried to suggest that he tried to come at me with an attitude like, well, Alan, don't you have any mutually beneficial friendships? Because I'm thinking you don't have any mutually beneficial friendships with women. And I'm like, number one, just like he said, I don't know him. You don't know me. I have quite a few. I ain't going to say I have hundreds, but the women who I am cool with in just like a platonic manner, I'm very cool with them. I'm very cool with them. And the difference, though, is, again, there's no expectation of financial favors going on with me and my female friends. So he can't compare the relationship he has with you to any of my friendships with a woman, because I ain't trying to – I'm not buying a woman's companionship. He's essentially purchasing your financial companionship. I mean, yeah, your companionship. He's purchasing it. And so he cannot compare his relationship with you to any relationship I have. So that's the first part where he got off with me, and that's why I said it was a fail. And even more so, again, for the umpteenth time, when Adrian lit into him, he did not receive that well. He did not. I know people. I know how people respond to certain things. That he did not receive Adrian's analysis of you two's friendship at all, because he know there was elements of truth to what Adrian was saying, and it cut real deep.
To piggyback on that, Alan, when Alan asked him, at no point in time in this 8 or 10 years have you thought about, wanted to have sex with Taylor, and he said, no, Taylor, that's not even realistic. That is not normal male-female relationship behavior. At some point in 10 years, he's thought about having sex with you. And for whether or not he's acted on it is a different question. But at some point, whenever you have a male-female relationship that's that close, Alan and I have known each other for 17 years, and I will be very honest and tell you that, yeah, the thought has crossed my mind once or twice. We've never acted on it because we have a different platonic type of friendship. But that is just the natural progression of any male-female relationship. And for him to sit there and say, no, that was a bunch of bullshit, that's the other reason why I don't think he was so believable.
Well, yeah,
if he honestly can sit there.
Rich isn't on the line to say that part, so. I mean,
it didn't sound convincing. I say again, Agent, on that part, he did not. When I was asking him the question about having sex with Taylor, if you were really paying attention, he did not. When people are telling the truth, they generally give very quick, precise answers. Yes, no, I did this, I didn't do it, blah, 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 blah. When I was asking him, because when I first asked him, I said, so you've never fucked her? And he hesitated a beat, and he said, no. And I said, so you telling me, like, she's never, like, sucked your dick, giving you a hand job? He hesitated. When this becomes an archive, you can go back and listen. He hesitated. He did not quickly say no. It's like he hesitated almost with the attitude like, okay, like, Taylor, am I supposed to say no here, or I don't know what you told them. So it was that type of hesitancy. But anyway, I'm not going to beat a dead horse. Adrian, thank you for calling in. I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to come back with at least a few more questions from my guests. If anybody else wants to call in and with a question or a comment about either the conversation period or specifically the exchange with me, Adrian Taylor, and Rich, you can do so by calling in 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. I'm going to be taking a 4 to 5 minute break so my guests can get a swig of water, but I will be back in about 4 to 5 minutes, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Are you a single heterosexual male who has experienced more than your share of problems, disappointments, and frustrations in your interactions with women of interest? Then you need to contact Linda Gross. She's the author of The Caveman Formula, How to Master Winning Ways with Women. She will offer you consultation sessions that will seek to identify and eliminate all the flaws and weaknesses in your behavior. Contact Linda today at info@themensadvocate.com. That's info@themensadvocate.com. Mention Mode 1 and you'll get 15 minutes free in your consultation session. Don't hesitate. Contact her today.
I don't want to give you the wrong impression. I need love and affection. And I hope I'm not sounding too desperate. I need love and affection.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode 1.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's only 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay.
There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. It's the first time ever in history.
Mindset is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
Just so listeners know, there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book, and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger, and now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you got to love it.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview with Taylor B. Jones, founder of the Sugar Daddy Formula, on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. 7 years, baby, 7 years on Blog Talk Radio as of next week. So join me next week for my 7-year celebration. Yep, I did my first episode on Blog Talk Radio on Tuesday, May 29th of 2007, but it was under another title. It was called Balls Out Talk with Mode 1. That was the name of my original show. And then about 3 to 3.5 weeks later, I changed it to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. And since then, I've had some of the nation's and really the world's best dating and relationship experts and authors on here, other self-help related gurus. And speaking of self-help, I have a woman tonight. She has an interesting area of self-help. She helps women become sugar babies and find themselves a financially generous sugar daddy. And her name is Taylor B. Jones. Taylor, let me ask you, are your parents still alive?
Yes, they are.
What do they think about the sugar daddy form?
Well, my mother is high five. My father, he told me when, this was like years ago, when I told him, I'm like, Dad, by the way, let me just tell you what I do on this side. I was like, I wrote books, I teach women this, and I remember being in his office, and then he looked at me, and he said, are you happy? And I said, yes, I am. And then right there, he was just like, you know, I can see how you would want to be with someone older and who is financially stable. So that was okay with him as far as, am I happy? Now, naturally, of course, I don't think a parent would be like, you know what, my daughter's going to be a sugar baby coach. They don't think that, but he was accepting of it. My parents, they were married over 30 years. Now they got a divorce, and he's dating someone younger. And my mother's dating someone younger. Go figure. And I remember the time when he told me when he was dating someone younger, after I told him that I was dating, you know, someone older. I said dating someone older, not as far as rich business partner. He came to me, it's like every year he goes to the Masters, and he came to me and said, how would you feel if I was dating someone the same age as you? And I was like, you know what, Dad, whatever, okay. And he go, no, how would you feel? And then I go, okay, well, are you happy?
So you've helped your dad get some pussy?
No, I didn't help. So, but he was just
you indirectly facilitated him getting some pussy.
Trying to fill me out how I would feel about him dating someone younger, in which he was in a relationship, and it was his way of
go ahead and say what you really want to say. Forget dating.
You know, he was dating.
He wanted to know how
you
feel about him fucking a woman younger.
Yes.
Say yes, sir.
And then I go, well,
say yes, sir.
Yes, sir, Alan.
Say it again.
Yes, sir.
Call me the king.
You're the king, Alan. And Adrian, if you're listening, you're the queen, too. You're the queen bee.
So your father was...
He flipped the script and asked me how would I feel about it. And then the way that he was asking after several times, then I'm like, okay, just tell me what's really going on. And then he goes, I'm dating someone younger, but she's not as young as you. She's like 10 years older than you. And then I'm like, okay, cool. I was like, does she make you happy? And he's like, you know, yes. And I'm like, well, you know what? My opinion doesn't matter because I'm not there every day with you. And if you found a woman that makes you happy, who's there for you, then that's great with me. So... And it works. It works for her and him.
So your father's fucking a younger woman, and uh-huh. Your mother's fucking a younger guy.
Yes.
Say yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Say it again.
Yes, sir.
Who's the king?
Alan, you're the king.
Alan, say it again.
Alan, you're the king.
Say you're dominating me right now, Alan.
Alan... You're dominating me right now.
Say it again.
Alan, you're dominating me right now.
So you met Rich when you were like somewhere between 22 and 24.
Hmm?
Where, if you remember this, where did you guys meet? Like a hotel, some kind of social function? Where did you guys meet?
A business function.
A
like
business
a
function.
How do you just go to somebody that's like the hotel?
I mean, I don't know shit. I don't know what sugar babies do. It's funny. As Adrian pointed out, you surely you scouted. You knew that a guy like him would be at whatever this social function was. Okay, now, I got away from a question I asked you earlier, which is a song on your website. You said there's... Because, see, I would think this is for a sugar baby to connect with a sugar daddy, I would think that would be an art. Like, I have a book called Ooh, Say It Again, Mastering the Fine Art of Verbal Seduction. But you say there's a science for a sugar baby to hook up with a sugar. So I want to hear about at least some, and I don't want you to get off of your coaching tips, but as much as you can, what is the behind the science of a sugar baby?
I'll give the gist. It's that everything that we do and anybody does is marketing themselves. Everything that we do is 100% marketing. It's how we sell ourselves. And that's across the board with me, how I sell myself to my family, how I want them to perceive me to be as far as their daughter, as far as my relationships with my friends and my relationships with my personal. It's within this lifestyle, sugar babies and sugar daddies, they want two different things. So how do you make that bridge work? Because a woman comes into this lifestyle as, well, I just want to find a man to spend money on me, provide me with lavish gifts. That guy, he wants something. So how can she attract him? And I'm not talking about someone who can't afford to do so. I'm talking about someone who is financially stable. She has to appeal to him in a certain way. We're all self-absorbed, so she has to make that connection to appeal to him. I show women how to market themselves and sell themselves to appeal to who their ideal target is. That's what I do, and I'm very good at it.
Well, obviously, I mean, if you got a guy like Rich putting you in his will, I mean, that's one thing you got to give Adrian, is that she gave you your respect. She doesn't agree with what you do from an ethical standpoint, but in terms of your talent in doing what you do, she gave you your respect, and I give you your respect. Because, I mean, if you're coaching other women, obviously, because I'm a coach, like I coach men how to approach women with more confidence, how to create more romantic and sexual chemistry with them, and how to bring out more of their alpha traits instead of their beta traits. And so in order for me to have the credibility to coach people, that means either currently or if not currently in my recent past, I had to be on top of my game. Otherwise, people be like, well, why would I want to learn from you when you know, but see, my students and clients know that I've done a lot of shit, you know. For example, not to, you know, go on a toot my horn streak, but, you know, for example, my most infamous story, I always bring this up, seem like every other episode, was, you know, I met a woman in a grocery store and like 5, 10, 15 minutes after I met a grocery store, she was sucking my dick in the grocery store. You laugh. I'm serious.
No. I'm okay. Maybe the thought popped in my mind. I'm thinking of how the whole scenario played out. So, what part of the grocery section do we need to look out for you in?
Well, number one, I always like to clarify. It wasn't like it was in the middle of the day. It's a, you know, 1:00 p.m. It was a 24-hour grocery store in Bloomington, Indiana. I went to school at Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana. And it was a 24-hour grocery store, which is actually still down in Bloomington. It's called Kroger's. And I was in the shampoo aisle. It was the aisle at the shampoo. And I approached this woman. Started being mold one with her. Matter of fact, go ahead and say mold one. Did you hear me?
Yes. I did.
Say
mode one.
Okay. Yeah, I was mode one with her, and she gave me about maybe, I'd call it 3 to 5 minutes of what I call token resistance. And, yeah, I kept talking shit to her. And what happened was...
Huh? I wonder, what did she say? What would make a woman go wherever you went to pull down your pants and suck your cock?
Oh, say that again. I like the way you said suck your cock.
And suck your cock.
Do you love to suck cock?
Well, woman doesn't.
Oh,
well,
I like that answer. But instead of saying well, woman doesn't, just say yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Say I love to suck cock.
I love to suck my man's cock.
Oh, okay. Lucky for him. So, yeah, you can take any woman there. You've heard my voice, so you see how I operate. Here's what I find in a nutshell. And my books, the people who've read my books know this. I basically divide women into four categories, which is a reciprocator, a rejecter, a pretender, and a time waster. A reciprocator, okay, I'm going to use you as an example in each one. If I approached you at a party and told you I was attracted to you and I wanted to fuck the shit out of you, and you was like, oh, shit, I want you to fuck the shit out of me, then you would be a reciprocator. You're offering no resistance whatsoever. You're down. Once I lay out my desires, interests, and intentions, you're down with those desires, interests, and intentions. That's going to be a man's easiest seduction. Really, I don't even call that a seduction because it's not a seduction. It's just you inviting a woman to fuck, and she's saying, yes, I want to fuck. A rejector would be like I approach you at the same party and I tell you I want to fuck you, and you're like, oh, no. Either you tell me you don't want to fuck because you're already involved with somebody or you're just simply not interested. So that would make you a rejector. I call those the two straightforward, non-manipulative types. Then the two trickier and more manipulative types is what's known as what I refer to as the pretender and the time waster. And that's what the woman in the grocery store, she was a pretender. A pretender is a woman who deep down is aroused by the things you're saying to her, particularly if you're very bold and highly self-assured and sexually provocative. But her traditional, what I call her traditional and or prudish social programming is going to provoke her to give you, at least initially, a prudish response. Like, oh, my God, I don't believe you're talking to me that way. I've never had a man talk to me that way. I mean, I just met you. Oh, my God, I can't believe you're talking about your dick in my mouth. Oh, my God, what they're doing is, because, see, if a woman is genuinely, I tell men this all the time, and actually for the men who listen, they're getting kind of a free consultation session from me right now. But, yeah, if a woman is truly not interested in you, she's not going to give you any resistance. She's just going to say, I'm not interested. Anytime a woman starts going into long explanations, asking you questions like, do you talk to all women like this? And, wow, you're so cocky and all that type of shit. That means basically you either gotten her pussy wet or you're on the verge of getting her pussy wet, but she's fighting in her head. She's, figuratively speaking, she's fighting with her social program. It's kind of like the cartoon I'm sure you've seen a number of times where you have a cartoon where they have the angel on the right shoulder and the devil on the left shoulder. Uh-huh. Well, and, you know, of course, the angel is saying, do the right thing, and the devil is saying, well, that's kind of what happens with pretenders. They kind of have one voice, I call it the social programming voice, saying, no, resist this guy, Alan. You know, he's being a jerk, and he's talking nasty to you and X-rated. You should not be interested in a guy like this. You want a guy who's a well-mannered gentleman. But the raw hormone side of her is saying, sure, he get my pussy whacked. So anyway. And then the final category of the four is what I call a time waster. And see, this fits in with more or less your line of work. And I told, like, matter of fact, Beige Fletcher, I told her, I think, if you remember an interview, I remember telling her straight up, she was a time waster is almost the opposite of a pretender. Whereas, again, a reciprocator, you let her know your interest, she tells you straightforwardly she's interested. A rejector, you tell her your interest, she straightforwardly tells you she's not interested. A pretender, you tell her your interest, she pretends like she's not interested, but deep down she really is. Time waster is just the opposite of the pretender. That's a woman who's not interested in you in any type of romantic manner and or sexual manner, but she will pretend as if she is for X number of hours, X number of days, X number of weeks, and beyond, because at minimum, she wants to maintain a platonic friendship with you, but she doesn't want to just come out and say that because she's scared you might leave her alone if she tells you that she just wants something purely platonic. And at maximum, she wants to use you for something. She wants to use you for financial favors, non-financial favors, entertaining companionship when she's bored, flattery when her self-esteem is low. That's what my last book is about. My very last book is called The Possibility of Sex. how naive and lustful men are manipulated by men regularly, and guys of rich ilk could benefit from that. But yeah, so time wishes. So anyway, so that's the four categories. And now going back to answer your question, then we'll move on back to
you. The grocery store.
Yeah, I approached her. What I did, I looked at her, which is one of my habits. A lot of times when I approach a woman, I don't say anything immediately. I take at least 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds. And you ever had a man just look deep into your eyes like he's trying to read your soul?
That's like me.
And that's what I do with women. That's why if you were to see the cover of my book, Mo 1, you would see that my eyes are on the cover, and that's what they represent is that. Yeah, a lot of times when I approach women, that's what I do. I just look at them, like, really provocatively in their eyes. And among other things, I'm letting the woman know just with my eye contact that I want to fuck her. Because I found there's a way you can look at a woman that if a woman is perceptive, she'll know that you want to fuck her just by the way you're looking at her. So that's the first thing I did. I approached this woman. I just looked at her, and she said something to the effect of, "Didn't your mother teach you it was rude to stare at a stranger?" I said, "Yeah, I think she might have said something like that, but I don't adhere to everything my mother says." And she said something like, "You're a piece of work," and she said, "Well, now that you're here," she was holding up 2 bottles of shampoo. And she said, "Can you help me choose? I can't make up my mind." And then I said, "Look at me in my eyes." And she did. And I said, "Do I look like I give a fuck about what shampoo you need to buy?" And she giggled and said, "Wow, you're a piece of work." And she said, "Okay, what's your name again?" I said, "Alan." She said, "Okay, Alan, if you don't give a fuck about my shampoo, what do you give a fuck about? Like, what are you thinking about right now?" That was my opening. I said, she had on this tight, short, black mini skirt with a V that went down to, like, the crack her ass. And I said, "I want to take you somewhere secluded, maybe even in this store, and lift up that mini skirt and slide my nice, juicy dick in that tight, wet pussy of yours." And she did what I call the theatrical phase, which is, "Oh, my God, I don't believe you said that. Oh, my God, I've never had a man talk to me like that," and blah, 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 blah. She did like 2, 3, 4 minutes of that. And I just was very cool, calm, collected. I said, "Well, believe it." And I think we exchanged 1 or 2 more comments. Then I just moved into her, and we start tongue kissing. And I was just grabbing her ass, and she could feel my hard dick. And she said, "Ooh, somebody's happy to see me or happy to be with me," or something like that. And I said, "Oh, yeah, I'm very much so." I said, "Matter of fact, you want to see it? See just how hard it is?" And this is where she made a mistake, and this is what led to her second. She didn't know how bold I was, so she had an attitude like, "Yeah, right. Like, you got the balls to pull out your dick in a public place like a grocery store." She, like, challenged me. And I get offended when women challenge my boldness. So anyway, I took like a half a step back, and I unzipped my pants and pulled out my dick. And she never looked at me in my eyes again. And you like that?
Yeah, I did. I liked it. I liked it a lot. Apple, like on that note, Alan, you're the king.
Oh, say it again.
That was Alan, you're the king.
So the significance of that night, and why that's such of all my stories, why that's the most infamous one, because my brother, who's probably my biggest fan and the one who first encouraged me to turn my behavior, my attitude, and my principles into a book, before that night, he didn't really believe in Mo 1. He had heard stories from, like, my friends and frat brothers, but he had an attitude like, "Dude, I just can't picture you being as bold and sexually straightforward women as you're telling me you've been and as some of your friends and frat brothers told me." But he was with me that night. Now, he didn't actually see me get my dick sucked in the store. But what happened, she starts sucking it in the store, and then this stock boy who was about 15, 16, 17 years old caught us and freaked out, and that freaked her out. So she gave me the keys of the car, and when I went out, I held up her keys to my brother, and he just had to look like, get the fuck out of here. And so he saw her when she sucked my dick when she came to the car. After she got done in the shop, she came in the car, and we talked for maybe 30 seconds. And then you, from his angle, he was about two or three car spaces away. You just saw her head drop in my lap. And he just had this look like, I'll be goddamn. And anyway, that night, that's when he said, that was the first night he said, dude, if you get, he said, is results like this normal for you? I said, yeah, I would pretty much say so. He said, man, you got to turn this into a book, man. He said, that's some amazing shit, dude. He said, now, you did not know this woman before tonight. I said, no, I met her in the aisle in the store. He said, she was sucking your dick. I was like, yes. He's like, dude, you got to turn this shit into a book, dude. That is some fucking amazing shit,
dude.
Hold on,
but did he take your advice, and did he get results?
Oh, yeah. He was my first, you could say, client student was my brother, yeah. Matter of fact, just a few weeks after I started giving him tips, he started having those type of results, and then other friends of mine. But I resisted for years. Like, I was more one, well, you already know my age. Yeah, I was more one back in, like, the mid to late 80s, early 90s, but I didn't finally turn it into a book until the mid-90s. He was working in San Diego. I was living in L.A., and he was having a bunch of guys bug him for dating advice, and he would give him his dating advice, but then he would always say, well, you really need to be talking to my younger brother. And they would say, well, what's up with your young brother? He'd be like, man, my young brother is the boldest motherfucker you'll ever meet in your life. He says shit like, you got to have big-ass balls to say. And they'd be like, give me some examples. And he would give me that, and they'd be like, fuck, your brother, dude, is off the chain, man. What the fuck? So they became enamored by me based on his stories, and he called me. He said, man, you gotta write a pamphlet, man, and kind of chronicling some of your stories, your experiences, the psychology behind, you know, what you do, why you do it. And so I did. I put together a pamphlet, and he gave it to about, I want to say, 8 to 10 guys, and at least half of those guys benefited from my pamphlet. Like, I'll give you two examples from it. I said, two of my principles. One was, I said, you got to eliminate at least 90 to 95% of what I call your trivial bullshit small talk. Because I noticed that a lot of guys, when they would approach women, they would start off engaging in small talk. Like, hey, so how you think the weather is? It's pretty great, huh? Yeah, so you come here a lot? Okay, so what kind of food you like? See, that all that bullshit, I don't do none of that shit. And my second principle, major principle, was when you say something bold, provocative, sexually straightforward, and a woman has, say, a theatrical reaction to it, a negative reaction, and this is one of my key principles, never, ever, ever back down from it or apologize from it. I don't care how adverse a reaction, because I tell one quick story, and then I really want to get back to you, because now we're doing too much talking about my backstory. But, like, I had this one friend. He was trying to emulate me, and he was saying bold shit, but he said, Alan, man, I just ain't connected with no women. I said, well, give me an example of some of the shit you're saying. And he told me shit he was saying. It was bold and straightforward. So I said, well, let me shadow you. So I shadowed him and watched him, and I saw his weakness. Whenever women would have a theatrical reaction, he would say, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't, you know, what was I thinking? I mean, I'm more of a gentleman than that. I didn't mean to offend you. And I was like, dude, you can never. What you're telling women when you do that, when you apologize or back down, you're saying, I was pretending to have big-ass balls, but really I'm a pussy. And I said, that don't get no woman's pussy wet. I said, you got to demonstrate to women that you really have big-ass balls. Worst thing you can do is pretend like you got big-ass balls. That's like you walking up to Mike Tyson and saying, Mike Tyson, I'll whoop your motherfucking ass. And as soon as he flinches, he's like, oh, please don't hit me. Please don't hit me. Oh, my God, please don't hit me. I mean, you would lose all kind of credibility with whatever men who are witnessing that shit. And so, because I don't apologize for shit. If I say something provocative to women, I don't care. They can have, like, the worst reaction in the history of the world, and I've had a handful of those. I don't ever apologize. I have that attitude, like, yeah, I said it, and what usually happens, the women, they go from being angry and resistant to being very submissive. As a matter of fact, that applies to the nickname, of course, you've been referring to me. That's where that came about, because these women in California, they knew my MO, and they would always see me in action, and they got me to a point where they would, like, take me out and challenge me. Like, they would take me to a nightclub, and they would say, okay, see that woman over there? We want to see you be Mo 1 with her. And then I would be Mo 1, and I would, you know, more often than not, end up seducing the women. And that's when they said, you know what we're going to call you? You are the fucking king, Alan. You're the king of verbal seduction. You know how to get a woman's pussy wet as soon as you meet him. I've never met a man that can get a woman's pussy wet as quickly as you do. You are truly the king.
I think that's right there. Everybody wants to be seduced in some way. And you were able to seduce them in such a way that the panties came down and you got what you want. And they're happy too.
Oh, of course. Yeah, they've been very happy. Yeah, yeah. It's
I always look at it like, for you to even get to that point, you had to become better at your craft. And for me, when I became better at my craft, because I can take a number two girl and put her against a supermodel and she can still get what she wants. Now, how can I do that? It's like, for me, I would apply to jobs that I know I'm not going to get. But if I can go in there and sell myself, I can get the job. And I would do that so that I can enhance my own craft as far as selling myself. I could walk into a room, look around, size them up, see any plaques, analyze them, and then make a connection, because that's all there is, making a connection. And then I can translate that to teach women how they can make the right connections at the right time and influence them in a certain way so that they can get in and fill a void, because everybody's missing a void. And just like your women, they want to be seduced. I want to be seduced. We all want to be seduced. The pleasure principle.
Say, sir, I love it when a man is able to get my pussy wet.
Say what?
Say, sir, I love it when a man is able to get my pussy wet.
Sir, I love it when a man is able to make my pussy get wet.
Say it again.
I love it when not just any man, but my man can make my pussy get wet.
So, as you alluded to earlier, you say you and Rich have not been intimate, but you have a man right now that's getting that pussy wet and fucking you good, huh?
That takes a certain type of man. It's not easy doing what I do, and you meet somebody, I'm upfront. I'm like, this is what I do. This is what it is. You either take it or leave it. If you can accept it, okay, we can move on. I don't believe in, as far as playing games, I gotta hide what I do, and then, you know, 30-60 days they'll feel like I'm manipulating them, and then they'll get insecure. They'd be like, you teach women all day to manipulate the other men, are you manipulating me? And I'm like, well, do you like what I do to you?
Now let me ask you, I hate to keep bringing up this woman's name because I just didn't really get along with her, but how do you separate yourself from, say, the Beige Fletchers of the world?
I enjoy my relationships. I don't have to just find somebody who can just afford me. That's not what I want. You have to have something else who can just afford me. I need that other stuff for a woman like myself. So I think with Beige and listening to her on your interview, it just came across that she was hurt in the past from a man of some sort. And when you got to the topic of her father, that's when she disconnected. So I think that there is something else affecting her way on how she handles her relationships. I enjoy relationships. I don't have to sit there and have a malicious intent. It's like I know how to make a person feel good in a certain way because it makes me feel good. And I know in return I'll get so much more.
Well, see, here's the thing about Beige, and I don't have any concrete evidence of this, so I have to classify it as speculation, but I'm pretty good at knowing when my instincts are right. And this is why I specifically ask you, do you like a man to get your pussy wet? Do you like being fucked? Because, see, this is what I found with a lot of women. Matter of fact, I had a female friend in L.A. who was, you could say, smooth at manipulating men. But the thing, guess what the thing that gave her the edge? She was what's known as a lipstick lesbian. So it was easy. A lipstick lesbian is basically a lesbian who's, it's a woman who's a lesbian, but she's very feminine, very sexy, the type of lesbian that would be easily to mistake as a full-fledged heterosexual. Like, there's some women you could be around and you're like, man, they so butch, I know they're a lesbian. There's other women who are really girly girl, but they're lesbians, and they refer to those as lipstick lesbians. And I had a friend in L.A. that was a lipstick lesbian. She used to play dudes. And the reason why she was so good at doing, because she didn't have the temptation of dick. Because I'm going to be honest with you. What I found with women, because I've fucked a lot of women. Like, I used to fuck a few women in California that most of the other guys they dealt with had wined and dined them to fuck them. Whereas when I came at them, they just let me fuck them just on my pure alphaness. And what I find is when a woman is a full-fledged heterosexual and she's trying to play that sugar baby / gold digger game, she can resist a large percentage of men. If a guy is a really bold, ballsy alpha male type and she's attracted to that guy, she ain't going to be able to play that motherfucker because she's going to want that dick. Because she's going to want to get fucked. And see, I don't know if you're familiar with these terms. I use them in a lot of my articles and books. There's terms that guys like me use, which is alpha male and beta male. And what I find is this. It's easy for women to play a beta male type. A beta male type is a guy who's very passive, very naive, very deferential. He's willing to allow women to call the shots. He's usually, at best, average in bed, if not less than average. He got a lot of weak tendencies about him. Whereas an alpha male is a motherfucker who's bold, competitive, ballsy, don't take no shit from guys or women. And so when a lot of women who try to play the role of the manipulator, the gold digger, the sugar baby, when they come across, because I used to work with a lot of them in studios, and they would even tell me that. Like, some of the women I work with at Paramount Studios, or they would say, Alan, first they would be bragging on the guys they did manipulate, but then they would give me my props by saying, they said, see, Alan, we couldn't manipulate you like that. And I was like, I know you wouldn't. And they would say, among other reasons, you know, in so many words, they basically say, we would want you to fuck us. You wouldn't have to incentivize the fucking. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I think Beige, I was going to say, my speculation with Beige, I think she was a lipstick lesbian. She never confirmed that, but she didn't 100% deny it either.
You can't call her a lesbian.
I'm saying, I didn't say it's a fact. Because I ain't going to ever state it as a fact, but I will state it as my strong speculative assertion. I do. I ain't never, if you want to do your research on her, you ain't going to find her picture with no dudes, no hugged up with no dudes. Almost all her pictures, that at least the ones I did research on, she's always with a group of women. Always with a group of women. And I told her that directly, so it ain't like I'm telling her this, saying this behind her back. I told her directly that I thought she was a lipstick lesbian. Because when I asked her specifically, unless she got she's still being interviewed. I asked her specifically at one point. I said, so do you love dick? And she got angry, actually. Now, most women, they would giggle in a comment like that or say, oh, or say something like you said, like, of course, all women. She, number one, got angry. She paused, and then she said, dick has nothing to do with what I do. When she responded like that, that's when I was like, in my mind, I was like, this chick is a, more than likely, she's a lipstick lesbian. Because when, again, if a woman's a full-fledged heterosexual, they'll make a beta male pay them for their companionship. But again, if, when they run across an alpha male, a man who just by his natural demeanor, the way he talks to her, the way he looks at her, just naturally gets her pussy wet to the point where she's like wanting him to really fuck her, they ain't going to play that game with that guy. They ain't going to play. They ain't going to have the strength to, honestly. They just not. And so that's been my experience. And from guys I talked to, they've said the same thing. You know, most of the alpha male type guys I know, they're like, oh, hell no, I ain't never winded down no bitch to get in her pants. Fuck that shit. That's beta male shit. That's what pimps do. That's basically what a pimp does. A pimp is an alpha male, and what he does is he tells his hoes, go find some beta males that are willing to pay you to have sex with you.
And bring it
but
back home.
I ain't going to pay you. You said what?
And I said, and bring it back home to me.
That's right. That's right. So, now as we close this out, I want you to say.
You're getting my pussy real wet for my man. That's about to tear this up.
All right, well, I'm not going to hold you. Tell my listeners where they can find you on the World Wide Web, and if you got any. Now, you're based out of Atlanta.
Yeah, Atlanta. I have businesses in Atlanta and Virginia. And you're going to have to come on to my podcast so I can have you in my hot seat while we tear up in the Mode 1.
Oh, shit, I love that. I mean, I don't know if I would. Now, I don't know if your podcast is almost specifically tailor-made to just sugar daddy, sugar baby talk. I don't know how much I can add in that regard. Well, I have had experiences as a male sugar baby, so I guess I can talk about that.
I love the way you talk about and analyze your mode ones and so forth, and I can take your information and also assist another sugar baby out because of human behavior is across the board. And just like that girl in that grocery store giving you head within a quick couple of minutes, I can show a sugar baby how to get what she wants too. So all information is welcome in my book.
Oh, I got, yeah, I've had, again, not a too hard, but I guess I have too much. That grocery store, that's a tip. But I had a woman in LAX airport I met in like 15, 20 minutes of that matter. She was sucking my dick in the airport. Just like you.
Okay,
sure.
Just real quick. Do you ever see these women ever again, or do you call them, or that's just that, bam, thank you?
Oh, it varies. For some women, it was kind of honestly a one-time thing. But I would say more often than not, I usually fuck them a few times. I mean, there ain't too many women I just was one and done. I've only had a few of those. I mean, usually I will fuck them off for at least 2 or 3 months, if not longer. Most women, once I start fucking them, we continue to have phone sex. Like, I've had women, honestly, and it made me sound scandalous, but I've had women who were married, engaged, and otherwise romantically involved that even though we weren't doing anything physically anymore, we still were having phone sex. Yeah, I would love to. Let's do that in the near future. I'd love to be on your podcast show, Chopping It Up.
Yeah, I can put you in my hot seat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I give you kudos on that. You did. You can brag to all your fans and loyal followers that, because you were in it. I mean, you were in an intense, you were at that portion where it was you and Rich on the phone. That was a very intense hot seat moment. And honestly, some of my guests might have hung up at it. Well, actually, Rich did hang up at that moment, I was going to say. But a lot of my guests, a lot of people can't take that. I mean, again, you heard the Beige Fletcher episode. Once Adrian started getting in, because we had a similar situation with her. When Adrian got on the phone, when Adrian started lightening her ass, because here's the thing. I'm going to say this quickly, and then I'll wrap up. But I try to be fair to all my guests, but if you come on my show and say something that makes you sound full of shit, I'm going to call you out. That relates to why I call the show Upfront and Straightforward. My tagline is, no fluff talk allowed, strong opinions welcome. And that's one thing I don't do. I don't do it like, that's why some guests have gotten mad at me or got disappointed, because I've had some guests that come on my show, they thought I was going to ask them a bunch of, you know, fluff type questions. And I don't ask fluff questions. I'm going to ask you straightforward, provocative shit. And I would say on average, probably 75 to 80% of my guests have been able to handle that. But I have at least 15 to 20% of them, they ain't been able to handle that. And Beige was one of those. She wasn't, and she, what made her full of shit, she started contradicting herself. You know, once, that's the first thing when I start getting on the guest cases. When they say something that's inconsistent, contradictory and or hypocritical or simply something that don't make sense. It don't make logical sense. But anyway, I've enjoyed talking to you again. You did survive the hot seat and we will surely be in touch. And yes, I look forward to being a guest on your show. So
no, thanks for having me. And what, it's 7 years for you, right?
Yeah, next week I'm going to be celebrating 7. And you should feel honored because you were actually, you're my last guest to make that, I'm sure you saw the collage I made. You were the last guest to make the collage. Represent 7 years. So
I'm going down in the Alan King books.
Yeah. Now tell me again, say, King, you got my pussy, so what?
How can I say that in such a way? King, you get my juices flowing.
Nah, that's too PG-13.
I know. King, you getting my pussy, so what? For my man. See? I got that extra.
I respect that. Throw it in your man.
Got that extra.
Anyway, I'm going to, listeners, well, all my live listeners, I think are gone. They didn't know the show was going to last as long.
We're gonna get the replay.
Is uploaded somewhere between 1 to 2 hours after the live portion ends. So I would check back in about, at least 1 hour. And, it'll be on the site. And listeners, that's going to do it for today's show. Join me next week again. I will be celebrating 7 years on Blog Talk Radio. I'll be celebrating 7 years on Blog Talk Radio. That'll be next week. Until then, have a safe and enjoyable weekend. And I'm going to have Taylor say one final Mo One.
Mode 1.
Alan Roger Curry.
From up front, straight forward.
Alan Roger Curry.
Mode 1.
That will do it, folks. Okay, I'll see you next week.